Hello and welcome to episode 11-7 of the Tech Gaming Podcast. I am your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me tonight is the customary cast of Halloweenies, starting with Sage, Samrage Morris Green.
Hello.
The extended hello. We also have Eric Blue Swim.
One of the people on this podcast killed Sean Nola. As the listeners, it is your job to figure out who did it.
Colonel Mustard. And speaking of that other colonel, we got Lieutenant Colonel Jeremy Lawman Lamont, our country's first and last hope when war becomes mechanized.
Murder. Murder most foul.
And not with us tonight, but here in spirit is, Blue mentioned, Sean Nola Kirkland, who's actually out at an art gallery. An art gallery.
That's what Deagle thinks. One of us did actually kill him.
He told me, I said, you are off the hook on one condition. If there were nudes there, he promised me there would be.
Noobs or boobs?
Nudes. There could be male or female nudes.
Oh, both. Okay. Good.
So I don't know. He mentioned artist's name, but
the female ones. Thank you very much.
Boobs.
Don't forget the ass. So speaking of, we got impressions.
Awesome. That fits right in there with the ass.
I wanted to I wanted to pause a little bit between talking about ass and talking about children. Otherwise, we'd be Pedo Bear approved. No, one of the things I wanted to mention, talk about, is I don't have children. That's probably for a good reason. I'm a big man-child myself that occasionally neglects my own health. So looking after another person would be a worrisome proposition. But if I did, I'd more than likely get them the Skylanders Giant Starter Pack before the holidays so I could play with them. The short time I do have off from work. So one of my problems with the first Skylanders with it is that the game felt like the Wii version was the lead platform, and the 360 version, it just didn't look as good as most Xbox offerings. And most of that has been remedied in the sequel. The engine definitely got a little bit of polish. It moves some of the time, not all the time, at 60 frames per second. And it kind of gives this little Diablo for kids game a nice little sheen. So much like the first game, you place different characters on what is called the Portal of Power, and they appear in game. And surprisingly, it's a really cool, it's still cool, to place a figure there and to have it recognized so quickly. With the $70, maybe $79 core set, you get T-Rex. He's the giant figure, along with Cinder, the dragon, and Jetvac, who's a British eagle. And one thing I thought about the gameplay with the first game, I thought the actual mechanics were pretty good, but the story and dialogue was a little bit boring for me. And with Giants, I feel like they improved it considerably. Tree Rex, he gives this growl. He says "tremendous," which is pretty funny. There's one of the guys. What is his name? Eruptor. He's this lava guy, and he remarked that when I put a hat on him, he said, "I hope this is fire retardant."
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, so there's some cute, cool stuff in there. The one thing I hoped for that they'd put in the sequel would be a jump button, because the action, it feels a little tied to the ground, but I can understand why they didn't put it in. It's totally accessible to kids. For adults, it has that obsessive lure, you know, that really caters to kind of an older demographic like myself. I can already see myself grabbing some Giants at the first available opportunity. I mean, after the show. And I think it's really cool that all the old Skylander figures work in the game. Except when you first start. I tried to put an old one on at the get-go, and it wouldn't recognize it. So that's Skylanders Giants, a little bit expensive. I guess there's up to $500 of stuff that you can buy. I played through about four levels before the show, just got in today. But I felt a little bit of the urge to go buy some more figures, but I didn't feel it was needed. I felt like I could get through the game with the elemental, with the elementals, and do fine as long as I had the basic forest, the undead, the mechanized, the tech people to open doors, then I would be okay.
And the game itself is still like the, what, top-down kind of action-y sort of thing?
Yes, it feels very Diablo. You have three, you have basic attacks. Every character starts with two attacks, and you can buy additional ones. With my tree guy, I went over to, I forgot her name, the power-up lady, and I bought I bought a weapon, which is really good because you get a lot of currency. Everything in the game you smash reveals currency. You collect that, and there's plenty of things to spend it on. There's a shitload of hats, probably 75 different hats that you can wear, and each of them have a different statistical advantage for you. Like I have a cowboy hat, creature hat, things like that, and plenty of stuff to find, a lot of little secrets, and just fun, just kind of charming. So.
So the loot has to be the draw then, and I guess the collecting the
characters.
The funny thing is, I was playing Torchlight 2 recently, and I think I've come to realize that I don't think loot for loot's sake really does it for me anymore.
Okay.
Is it just me? Does everybody else still? Maybe.
I think it depends on the loot, but I gotta say, like even Diablo 3, even though it impresses me less as a Diablo game. I still do get drawn in by I don't think the loot system is as good as Diablo 2, but I don't know. I don't like having to farm for cool things. Like I can't really get into World of Warcraft because I don't like that you have to farm for hours and hours and hours to get a cool sword. But I like loot systems where it's like a nice, fast-paced, top-down kind of thing. I don't know. I like it.
Yeah, I think that's probably part of it too, is like how they implement the loot. Because if you save up a lot of money and then buy this great thing, and then you go to the next level and you just get a drop that's better anyway, like that kind of is deflating.
And, whereas in Grandia 2, I think that there were some items that you like had to buy because you weren't going to find them really, and so it gave you a good incentive to like, cool, I'm going to go buy this thing. And I actually get into the Japanese accessorizing stuff where it's like, you can wear this headband and it gives you +2 to your stamina. And you're like, cool, it has bunny ears. I'm excited.
I think everybody likes for their like in-game character to have, the accoutrements show up. I don't think there's anyone who doesn't like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Did you play the first one, Jeremy?
Actually, my brother-in-law It was Christmas last year or the year before, whenever Skylanders came out, and he didn't even really put on any airs. He said he wanted it for himself, not for his kids, so we got it for him. And it was cool, the Portal of Power, it's a little portally thing. And I have to admit, to me, at least the first game kind of, it didn't seem as much Diablo to me as it seemed kind of like crummy PS2 top-down kind of action game, kind of Spyro-y. Kind of thing. Why do they even bother with Spyro in that? Is Spyro still like a main character in that game?
I haven't
brand recognition, maybe.
I haven't seen Spyro.
Yeah, I think they've probably took Spyro quietly out to behind the shed. I guess at this.
No,
point.
I'm sure. I'm sure. Cinder.
But did you? Was, you was know, that you may have.
Friend?
No. Yeah. Cinder the girlfriend. Okay,
well, she comes with a basic set.
Now, and you probably said this already, but all of the previous Skylanders are still compatible with this,
yes,
right?
They are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good.
It's really cool because I walked into one lava area, and that's when I used Eruptor. And what's interesting is that it still remembers the level they were at. So all your work in the first game carries over.
Well, from what I understand, it's the little action figure
RFID.
Itself that actually, it's
an RFID little tiny chip. They're about the size of a grain of rice in there, and that stores all the information on there.
And
I've even heard people
take those cross platform too, right?
Yes.
Like you have to have the Portal of Power for the platform you're on, but if you take your Spyro from one place and take it to the friend's like iPhone version or something, it still works.
I think the portholes for the I could be wrong on this for the PS3 and 360 may be the same. The Wii one's different than, of course, the 3DS one.
Really? Wii.
Yeah. Are you sure?
No, I'm not sure, but they.
I've heard that they're universal.
Okay. Should I look it up?
No.
Well, no, the actual figures.
Yeah.
The figures, of course, are. I was talking about the little portals.
Oh yeah, right. Okay.
Did they lower the price point on the like if you go to get the old one?
Oh, I haven't checked the old one.
Because I really love the idea.
Actually, I take that back. I've seen some sales recently on the first one. I think Best Buy, their deal of the day, they had it for $40 about a week ago.
Yeah, but still the characters themselves are like, what, $10, $12 a piece or something?
I think you can find them on sale for $5. And with Christmas coming around the corner, you should be able to get a deal.
If I was a kid, I think I'd be totally, like, if I didn't have to pay for it myself, right. I would be all about it. And I'd be like, Mom, I want this. Because I think it's a really cool thing, and I really want one, but I can't afford to buy the thing and all the figures and then the game and then the upgrade. Yeah. Like, it's too much for me right now.
Yeah. Wait till it goes on sale. So,
right.
Isn't Disney creating one that's a game like Skylanders, but it has, I think, Disney and maybe Toy Story characters?
That would be kind of cool.
I thought I heard a rumor or confirmation about that a few days ago.
How would that be different from like Kingdom Hearts, though? I mean, doesn't Kingdom Hearts already kind of feel that way?
It would have a story you could understand.
Yeah. I mean, character-wise, not gameplay-wise, but I feel like that sort of already exists. Like,
right.
Do you guys go ahead, Blue.
I was just gonna say, well, I mean, not everybody is like quite into RPGs, so you know, maybe having like a, you know, casual Skylanders-esque variation would be pretty good for the younger audience.
That's true. That's a good point.
I mean, Kingdom Hearts is good, but I mean, it's an RPG. It's like kind of targeted towards like the like older Disney demographic, not quite the like five and under.
Right. No. Have you guys seen, by the way, the some of the screens for the 3DS version of Epic Mickey 2?
No, they look good.
It's 2D. Like it looks like the old Mickey games that were on the SNES and Genesis, but up-resed.
Well, and there were levels like that in the first Epic Mickey.
Yeah, game. Yeah. Which
the
was kind of my
not hub worlds, but the traveling things between areas.
Which was my favorite part, so I'm really looking forward to this. So,
can we tangent real quick before we move on?
I was going to tangent. I was
the whole
tangent
thing is a tangent.
Well, I got a quick tangent. You mentioned this, and it got me thinking.
Yes.
Are there any other than top-down games? Because you don't really need it. I mean, you can get away with not having it in them. Are there any games anymore that don't have a jump feature? And if not, what the fuck are they thinking?
Aircraft sims.
You know what I mean, where it would be appropriate, like planes don't jump, but like, have you, I mean, can you guys, I mean, you remember,
someone's never seen Robotech.
You remember when it was like a novelty, right, when it was like, ooh, a game where I can jump, and like it was about half and half for a while, but I can't think of any games anymore where you, other than, you know, like Diablo, but other than like some top down loot 'em ups, I don't remember any games that recently you can't jump in.
Cameo,
you know,
you can
kind of
jump.
One of those things where people who play games kind of have this obsessive need for jumping, even when it's not actually needed in the game. I mean, I think back to you know, the remake of Bionic Commando, and everyone was like, "Oh, I can't!" Like, they feel like they're being held underwater or something. Like, I can't jump. I can't jump. It's so claustrophobic. I can't move. But so I think people tend to put jumping in, even if it's not really. I mean, actually, they added jump to the second one, even. But
right, you know, I think I blame Mario 64. Mario 64 was so like, I'm going to jump. I think from that point on, everyone was like, ooh, I got to have people jump too.
But it's a Mario game. Well, you're going to have Mario on the ground.
But that was when he got really like, I can triple jump, bitch, right up into the top of a fucking tree.
I don't know. Mario didn't jump in like Mario in, what was the time machine one?
Mario's time machine?
Mario's time machine.
Nice try.
There was one that was like a learning thing, like you go to the Trevi Fountain and stuff like
teaches
that.
It seems typing? Like did... Was it Mario
no.
teaches?
Oh, that was a good one too.
If it was educational, Jeremy, I missed it.
Mario is missing.
It might have been Mario's missing. In which case, it was probably Luigi, and he probably did jump. Never mind.
Jumped off a cliff and took the franchise with him.
Damn. Just like our show.
Kind of like this tangent. Anyway.
Yes. So anyway, to get back on track, the other thing I've been playing is a game called Funky Smugglers. It's an Android app from 11-Bit Studios. Sage, you'd probably remember them. They're the developer behind Anomaly, Warzone Earth. So let me preface this by saying this is a far less serious game than Warzone, and no Jason Statham voice in this one. So Yes, in the game you play a TSA agent, and on the screen it's this large rectangle that simulates an X-ray machine. And what happens is you view your perspectives from the side. People go through one side, and then as they cross the X-ray machine, you see their bones, and you see green items like apples, which are good stuff. And you also see the contraband, which is marked in red. So as you're playing, you're in this constant process of people going by that have a few items, a few bad items that you got to pull away. away. So you have guys with the Uzis and their afros. You have these old hunchback ladies with grenades in their posteriors. And you got to wipe the bad things away as this song, which parodies 70s funk, plays in the background. In execution, it's a bit like Fruit Ninja, especially with the... the recent, some of the more recent iterations of Fruit Ninja, the Puss in Boots, where they added things like power ups. There's these helicopters that go by and they'll give you things like magnets. They'll speed up, slow down the game, restore health. After a few games, you'll notice if you're playing it like Fruit Ninja, you're playing it wrong. There's a combo system in there, and you can drop items there, and you can pick up and drop items. And that really adds an interesting mechanic to the game because there's this kind of countdown timer. So what you're doing is moving your finger kind of almost like those old carnival machines where you would move something and try not to touch it. Otherwise, it would set off an alarm.
Those are the worst.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun than those because there's not as much on the line. There's not that big plush, you know, staring at you there. The other element that deserves attention is the score meter, which is sadly broken by the ability to buy a multiplier there. If they fix that, it would definitely be worth your 99 cents because it's fun, it's cute, and it's pretty addictive too. So fun little game. It's pretty funky, yeah.
Is it funky as in funky smelling or funky as in like groovy?
A little bit of both. I'm pretty sure the developers on the title screen there, they're dressed up in like 70s clothes. And I don't know. It's kind of fun. In between, as you go from level to level, there's what are those things called at the airports? The things that kind of flip down. They're antiquated now, and they show like the next plane coming in. And they'll name the levels like Harmless Hippies from Hamburg and, I don't know, you know, terrorists from, you know, terrorists from Paris or little things like that.
They really like the alliteration stuff, I've noticed.
Yeah, as do I, if you've read my reviews.
No, totally. is it, you know what would be cool is if it had DLC updates with new, like whenever TSA changes their restricted items, if the DLC was an update that like, now apples are actually bad, you gotta take them out.
As it is, it's pretty funny because, you know, you've seen these grandmas with grenades up their ass and, you know, screwdrivers.
Oh my god.
You know what?
Well, you're not seeing it up their rectum per se, but you see a pair of pliers and you know where they're hiding it, and so it's kind of funny.
Wow. Speaking of rectums, you know what would be a great promotional item for this game?
It's a great transition, Blue. No, what would be a great grenades?
Branded rubber gloves.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for the more socially sensitive rebranding Funky Snugglers.
Oh. Wait, which came first, the Smugglers or the Snugglers?
In Smuggle Truck? Well, it used to be Smuggle Truck, and then they decided that they didn't want to smuggle people across the border. It wasn't. Yeah, so they called it Snuggle Truck instead.
Then it became plushies.
Yeah, it did. Yep.
I
don't know. I kind of like that. I like that it has a story like that. So I'm waiting for Funky Snugglers.
I'm a little upset that they backed out about that one.
Really? Yeah. Well, now we have a game that's called Snuggle Truck.
That is true.
See, that makes me think of all kinds of different things, though.
Snuggle Truck, free ice cream on the side of it.
Oh.
Just worry that the developers will kind of back out of their ideas, change a letter or two, and then just rebrand it.
Indeed.
That's like, Snuggle at Fallujah or something? I don't know.
Snuggle Plooza.
So, Sage.
Let's
talk about some Dishonored.
Yeah, I would be honored to talk about Dishonored.
Oh, I see what you did there.
What did you think about it?
No, you start.
Oh.
You play.
Thank you.
Yes.
I know that you were getting flack for the score that you gave it on the website.
Yes.
I actually would have given it a B. You gave it a B+. I would have given it a B because I'm really not impressed by the areas in which there's a definite lack of polish. Nope. And there didn't need to be my brother tried to make this argument with me where he was like, well, they released it so quickly and it's okay, great, but nobody asked them to. And I think they kind of did that to undercut Infinite because it does. I don't think people were saying it's too much like BioShock, and I don't think it really plays or feels like BioShock, but there's enough of that visual graphic aesthetic there that you do. It's sort of, you catch a whiff of Bioshock every now and then, mm-hmm. speaking of smelling funky. And
smugglers.
They're smugglers. And I feel like that was something that if they had kept it for, you know, a couple more months and really ironed out those areas, like that group of assassins that finds you, mm-hmm. and they're not connected to any quest and they never get mentioned again and they don't tell you why they're after you and you kill them and then nothing comes of it. And then you think it's going to be an interesting side quest or something and then nothing happens.
Well, let's break that down. Let's talk about the story. I really like the beginning of the story. Yeah. I thought everything's kind of falling apart. You're meeting the protagonist at kind of the worst situation possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, they introduce some characters, don't do much with them. So that feels a little bit rushed.
Right.
And then the game itself, the last, depending on which of the three conclusions you receive, it can last as little as 30 seconds before you have maybe a, 45 second, 60 second kind of a encapsulation of what happens within the world, and then music video.
Yep.
I felt that was a little quick and abrupt. I didn't feel close. Yeah.
No, me neither. It was a huge letdown. I mean, lots of games don't have the best ending, but usually they have an ending that's compelling enough that I'm like, I could play through that again. This ending was anticlimactic enough that I will play through it again because I want to play the other way of how I played, but it really turned me off from the game for at least a week and a half. I was like, I don't want to play anymore.
I guess maybe it wasn't the ending, because the ending didn't bother me as much as the lack of foreshadowing, like, here comes the end.
Right.
Was that it for you? Was it more of the actual ending? Was it Mass Effect 3? This ending is garbage. I'm going to write the doctors.
Right. It was a little bit of both. So here's the thing. I like the ending cinematic that comes before the credits. Yeah. The way they did it was really cool visually. It was really interesting. It fit with the flow. I liked a lot. I agree with you that the lack of foreshadowing was it made it feel kind of sudden, which was part of the anticlimacticness. But the other thing was that the ending I got, which was the low chaos ending, I won't spoil anything, but it was the low chaos ending, was so, there was nothing to do. And there was so much so nothing to do that it made me feel like, well, why would I want it? Because I heard that the high chaos ending, I haven't gotten it yet, but I heard that there's a lot more going on dynamically if you get the high chaos ending. And so it made me feel like that's a pretty big disincentive, honestly, to play low chaos. Because those fuckers make it so easy to kill them, and they make you want to kill them. So you mm-hmm. have to really want to be low chaos to not go around killing people. It's just so easy to do. Mm-hmm. And I went out of my way to not kill people so I could have the nice, happy, low chaos ending. And
kill anyone?
I did not kill anyone. Like, every now and then there'd be a moment where some guy just totally got in my face with a gun, and I know I could have blinked away, but I wasn't trying to go for super innocent, never kill anybody either. So when that happened, I would just, you know, stab them in the throat and decapitate them.
Right.
Because they got in my face. Fuck them. Right.
Did you play it all the way through without, you know, you can save anywhere? And one of the things that I tried for a little while was to play it that way. Where I wouldn't, you know, say, okay, I feel like something's coming up, and, you know, save every 5 minutes. Because I believe that playing it like that not only feels a little bit like cheating, mm-hmm. but also it kind of pulls you out of the narrative because you're telling yourself, oh, it's been a couple minutes, I better save again.
Yeah.
Because one of the problems, I guess, I had with the game was the stealth. The stealth wasn't as polished for me. I couldn't quite tell when guys would see me. Sometimes the AI jumped from being really perceptive to dumb as shit. quite often. Yeah.
I think that was the biggest problem with it. Like, the stealth mechanics themselves of you being stealthy, I quite liked.
Okay.
I liked the crouching. I liked that it would show the little, you know, indicators over people's heads. I think you mentioned this before. I like how the outside edge of the screen dims when you're crouched down, and so it.
I didn't like that it was in first person.
I liked it fine because it actually, I mean, normally I like my stealth to be in third person, like Splinter Cell, but I actually liked it in this one because it made me feel like Corvo, like it immersed me in the game more, and I felt like
except
it was,
when you're holding something and then it's just floating in front of you.
Yeah, that was one of those things. So as far as moving around goes, the floaty object thing was like, why didn't you guys polish that? Every now and then I'd encounter like sticky edges on things, which is, I mean, that's so stupid. If you're gonna have a stealth game, you can't have corners snagging you because that just ruins the whole element. And then the other thing was that I didn't like how, like you said, I didn't like how inconsistent the AI was. And like, I would have moments where, and it glitched with the auto saving too. I would start an area, it would auto save because I had gotten to a new place or whatever, or picked up a rune or, you know, whatever. And it would auto save, and I'd be on one side of a wall, and I'd like creep into the building, and the other person clearly can't see me because they're halfway up a staircase on the other side of the wall. And it would be fine, only then something would happen and they would see me, and somehow the autosave would like resave over itself without telling me. Like the little indicator didn't come up. But then if I died or I had to restart there, every time I restarted there, the guy already knew that I was there, even though I hadn't even come into the building yet. Mm-hmm. And that happened to me in like three or four different places, is the only reason I bring it up, because it happened frequently enough that it felt like a bug that either they should patch out or that they like didn't find to begin with.
He
should.
Remembered in his past life that you killed him.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like that reincarnation knowledge could be a really cool concept for a game, but it shouldn't be in this game. Right.
But it's a bug feature in this.
Yeah, totally. Featured
so
bug.
So can I ask a question here? So you mentioned, I'm still trying to kind of figure out what this game is like. So you mentioned kind of BioShock, and from everything that I've heard, it's like BioShock with the powers and stuff like that, but then you talk about the ability to approach from different, you know, angles, like dialogue based and stuff like that. It sounds, and then the stealth sounds a little bit like Deus Ex. I mean, on the scale of where this game fits in that pantheon, I mean, is it more to one side or the other? I guess I'd
put a little Splinter Cell in there as well.
But I think it's its own game. Like actually, I mean, you being able to use powers is, I guess, BioShocky, but you can do that in a lot of games at this point. So I wouldn't say that it's so much them anymore. But I think that the powers themselves are pretty unique. Like summoning rats is not something I've ever been able to do in another game.
You can summon bees in BioShock.
You could, but it doesn't function the same way. And this game's a lot more graphically visceral. Like the rats eat people and you watch their bodies turn into
which looks really bad. It's like it goes through these different cycles of animations where you just see like parts that are bouncing out. It almost looks comical. Like, it's like all of a sudden
like a little dust cloud and like
yeah,
stuff.
That's exactly how it looks. It's like, okay, here's blobs of flesh and then they disappear since they hit the ground. And now there's bones. And then when the bones disappear, like that's it. The whole
But the weird
gone.
Thing that I noticed is it depends on the angle and where you are. Because some places, like that's one thing, if you knock
if you're
a guard
looking out, above, yeah.
If you knock a guard out instead of killing him and leave him in a place where there are a lot of rats, they will come find him and eat him, which I felt horrific about because I was showing my friend the game and I left these guards unconscious. And then I sort of walked back near there and heard this noise and it was this chomping noise. And I was just like, oh, God.
Does that count as a kill?
I'm not sure. I couldn't tell because I wasn't paying it. I mean,
because you are directly responsible. That's like manslaughter.
I know. It should count as a kill, but I'm not sure that it does because you can kill quite a few people and still get low chaos. That was the other thing. That seemed
weird
to me.
But I wondered if you're going for the no kill option. You leave somebody in there, and then the rats get them.
But it was kind of horrific, and like from that angle, like they were in a streetcar or something, and I went and looked at them. From that angle, it looked great. Like the flesh was slowly disappearing, and then finally they became like a, you know, puddle of blood and bones. But
the one thing I really liked about the game is the sense of the vertical environments, and so I would always kind of climb, and I'd use that advantage, and so often, you know, when I was looking at the rats, I'd be up above them.
Yeah.
So that was probably
another thing that I was. Oh, sorry, Jeremy. Go ahead.
I was going to say BioShock is based on Atlas Shrugged, and Dishonored is based on the jungle. Where the guy gets eaten by the rats. And,
Sinclair? You know. Is it Sinclair Lewis?
Yeah, it's like that Stannis, what's his name, the Polish family, and they find his body all eaten by rats.
No, I know what you're saying.
Oh, no,
yeah.
I was thinking of Upton Sinclair.
Oh, you're thinking of Grapes of Wrath?
No. I was thinking of that satirical piece about eating children.
Oh no, that's Jonathan Swift.
Jonathan Swift, okay.
But Upton Sinclair did write The Jungle.
Victorian, okay, yeah.
You know, anyway. What? High school English class is in.
Apparently. I don't know that I would compare it to that, but
what
maybe
about The Great Gatsby?
No, it's not that, at all actually. Like The Great Gatsby.
I'm kidding.
Just God, you're literally the two of you are going to bore our listeners to death. They're going to be like, I wanted to play it, but now that they're comparing it to literature,
reminds me of my teacher.
It's a book. Ugh.
No, I like books. No, but that was the other thing that kind of disappointed me, was that I felt like those little graphical things could also have been. And the other thing is, it was harder at E3, and I'm a little confused about that. And I don't know if it's that they changed the scale, like what was normal play at E3 became hard, like hard difficulty. Because there were areas when I played at E3 where there were like three tall boys that I had to deal with, and I maybe saw seven tall boys in my entire playthrough of the game. They're like that exact area, there was none of the guys there that I had to fight at E3. They weren't there. The
first two missions were rather difficult because you felt underpowered.
Right.
And it kind of hit its stride. And then about fifth, sixth mission, you felt overpowered. And just totally. Like you said, it was way too easy. And I lost a little bit of interest. I mean, yeah, it was cool. Like a lot of games, you know, Crackdown, Prototype, to use those abilities to, if you wanted to, if you went that route, to screw with people. But you were just overpowered.
Yeah, and I didn't even end up using all my runes because I didn't realize I was, like you said, I didn't realize the end of the game was coming, and I was sort of saving them. I mean, I had all the powers I wanted.
Right.
So I was sort of saving them to see, like, okay, there's these two powers I haven't really put anything into, and maybe I'll need one of them, so I'll wait and I'll save them. I think I finished the game with, like, 10 runes or something that I just hadn't used.
Hey, Bethesda, can I cash those out for a Chivo?
Yeah, right. Oh, an achievement. I thought that might happen, actually. I was like, I should get an achievement for that. Didn't use all your runes. Nope.
For being prudent.
For being right, exactly. Nope, didn't happen. One of the things that's actually interesting with the achievements, though,
yes.
You get achievements for weird things and not for the things you'd expect. And my brother had an interesting observation, which is that for the things you get achievements for, it seems to mostly be things that an assassin would actually do. And I kind of like that, because I kind of like that they're giving you achievements for playing like an assassin, not for you got 5 million kills and not for, you know, some random thing. It's the joy of doing the things that doesn't get you an achievement is in the thing itself.
Right.
So if you run around and like kill a bunch of people with a shotgun, that's really cool feeling. And that's your achievement. You don't get an achievement for that. Whereas, you know, being stealthy like an assassin, not that you have to play it stealthy, but like those assassin moments, that's when you get the achievements. And that's kind of a cool thing, actually, as far as immersion goes.
She could at least get a $5 coupon for the next bro shooter. Gears of War 4, dude. Pre-order now.
They should start hiding that in games. Like, if you kill everyone, like, your achievement is just like Gears of War. You're like, oh, well.
$5 off your purchase.
Yeah, that would be cool. But not to sound totally negative on it, I do still think it's a really great game. It's not game of the year, but it is a really great game. The powers are really original. Most of the movement moves very well, I thought.
The movement moves well.
Well, sorry, but you know what I mean. Like the mechanics move very well, and they're fluid.
Yeah.
Weepers, other than the fact that they're a little zombie-ish, like too much so, yes. Weepers are cool.
Wait, I thought you liked zombies. I was going to mention that in the review. I was like, do they really need zombie-like creatures?
No, I do like zombies, but I didn't like that. Honestly, I watch Face Off, okay? That makeup show or whatever. And
not
they
the John Travolta, Nicolas Cage.
Not the John Travolta.
I was thinking Nicolas Cage, because I almost made a Nicolas Cage reference about the bees on The Wicker Man.
That was
bees! No!
That would have been awesome.
No, not the Nicolas Cage movie. The
John Woo movie. That was awesome.
No. The makeup show, which actually I've gotten kind of into, because they do a really good job. It's really impressive. But they had a Dishonored one where the characters they had to pick to turn their models into were characters from Dishonored. And watching that, I got the sense that the Weepers were going to be this much more like involved, interesting class of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got to the game and saw that they're basically slightly, I mean, they're much smarter zombies because they're still people. They're not dead, but they're smarter zombies, and they still run after you and they still walk around vomiting blood and everything. I was a little disappointed. I felt like there should have been more to them than just they're basically a zombie.
Right. Agreed.
But no, I mean, overall, I mean, you gave it a B+. I'd give it a B. Overall, I think it's a pretty good game. And it's
even Sage critiques me. That's
well,
how we
no.
roll, folks.
Hey, okay. Man, I was so excited for it, and I'm giving it a lower grade than you did.
I know.
I feel
your,
like
your expectations were probably a little higher than mine.
But that, well, that's true. But the two things that really affect my grade for it are they made it easier than it was at E3, which disappoints me because their whole thing was that they were getting away from the whole, like, we're going to make games dumb for dumb people. And the other thing is that I wouldn't mind if it had little glitchy things. I mean, it's got Bethesda's name on it, so of course there's going to be weird random glitches. But
but they're just the publisher.
No, I know, but I've decided anything that their name is on has random glitch bullshit because it does.
We meet Sean on the show. I would, if he was on here, he would give a 15-minute rant on Skyrim.
Random renderings and blah. Don't get me wrong. I know that Bethesda tackles huge projects, and that's why. I'm mostly joking, but they do seem to have a penchant for games that have like random bugs in them, like a lot of them. But that's the other thing.
We could bring up Doom. Did you guys hear about Doom 3?
No, what happened?
I guess there's the older Doom games, but you cannot play those if you install it directly to the disc.
So something's bugged in it that it won't work?
Yes. And I don't know why they're not patching it.
I think, wasn't it something to do with the XBLA versions? It, like, yes. The system auto-detects it the same way as the XBLA versions or something like that?
Oh, speaking of face off and makeup.
Oh, I forgot to tell you guys. I did a little research. Speaking of Microsoft this week, there was the dashboard update, and so I decided to have a little fun with three of my friends. And I asked them after the dashboard update. Two of them were kind of they were 360 owners, but more the casual side, not hardcore hardcore players by any means. And the third one was a PS3 owner. And I, with the new dashboard update, I timed them so that they could find where the latest demos were. So from a screen that allowed access to the demos immediately, guess how long on average it took them to find it?
Minute and a half.
You're pretty...
3 minutes?
No. Actually, the average was very close. 1 minute and 21 seconds.
Damn.
I hate the update. I think it's garbage. It's such garbage. I'm really upset about it, actually.
Yeah. So
I mean, they still have that damn gray thing at the bottom that's supposed to be like a surface where all of these things are hovering over and your avatar is standing on it, and it completely fucks up the themes in the back.
But the themes aside, they literally, it's like they were like, so what's popular on the internet these days? Let's vomit that all over the dashboard and make
everything. I don't see tentacles.
Other than tentacles, but like there's a pin thing on there now, and someone was telling me how that's just like Pinterest. I don't even know what Pinterest is. I mean, now I know what it is, but that's just like Pinterest. And like it became like now to find Netflix, I have to go find fucking Netflix, and if I want it to be easy, I have to pin it to the fuck would you make?
But I do appreciate their sense of honesty. They renamed Quick Play because it was so damn slow; it would take about 90 seconds to.
They just call it Play now.
No, they just call it Recent. And it still takes forever. You hit that thing, and it spins around for at least a good minute.
Like, you want to impress me with your update, then you should make the things that are on there run better. You should not fucking.
And especially because the Metro interface looks so close to Windows 8. For many people, they might say, okay, Microsoft, it kind of looks like Windows 8. Should I be spending my money on 8? Oh, no. This is so slow, I'm a little reluctant to. I think I'll stick with XP.
Yeah, but people just buy the stuff on pack-ins. Like, nobody goes out and buys Windows.
Well,
you just get it preloaded on your computer.
Not right away.
I think a lot of people do.
Yeah?
Yeah. I bet they'll be at least a couple million people that will.
Not this time.
Yeah, maybe not. Yikes.
You know, one thing I noticed about the pins was you can't use them offline.
The pins?
No, you can't. If you aren't connected to Xbox Live, you cannot pin anything to it, and I have no fucking idea why they would even consider doing that.
Yeah, that's stupid.
It'd be kind of cool if there was a picture of Major Nelson, you could pin a nose on him.
pin the tentacles.
See, Microsoft, these are the things you should add.
In the penis on Major Nelson.
That's gross. Speaking of tentacles, I have to bring this up for Halloween. Speaking of tentacles, if you haven't seen Slither, you should go see Slither. It's on Netflix, so it's free. So as long as you have or know
someone... Are they really tentacles? Or are they snakes?
No, they're tentacles. I thought that too. My friend told me to watch it. And I,
they're actually like slugs.
But there are some moments that are tentacle porn-ish. And the first one happened, and I texted my friend and was like, what the fuck? And he was like, it's called Slither. And I was like, yeah, I thought that meant snakes, not tentacle porn. What the hell? You know, it's not graphic that way. But the makeup's incredible. beautiful. I haven't seen a horror movie with good makeup in a long time, and like I was blown away. I mean, the makeup in it, I know I'm talking about makeup a lot, but the monster makeup in it is great. Like, it's not cheesy. It looks really authentic. The slugs are actually really clever and cool and much scarier than you. I mean, it's not like scary, but it's much scarier than you'd think it would be.
It's like a comedy movie, isn't it?
Campy. Plus, it's Nathan Fillion, right, who is Malcolm Reynolds from Firefly, in case anybody doesn't know actor names.
He's also Captain Hammer.
He's Captain Hammer. He's also Castle. He's the best.
My penis is the hammer.
The hammer is my penis.
The hammer is my penis. Yeah, that's right.
Then how do you make a jackhammer? How do you make a jackhammer?
I'm not going to ask. Don't ask. Anyway.
So tentacles, fapping, we got the usual tenants out of the way.
Tentacles, fapping. Well, we always talk about tentacle porn, and now I'm putting it out there that there is a movie that has a PG version of what would be tentacle porn that everyone...
I think it's rated R.
For Halloween. Well, no, I know, but the tentacle porn part is PG.
Okay. I don't want the listeners to show it to the kids thinking it's PG. Hey, kids, actually, tentacle porn.
Here's a PG, but we're going to teach you about... If you're not going to learn it from us, you're going to learn it on the street.
So we're going
to teach you. I actually added Slither to my instant queue day before yesterday. So okay. I'm going to watch that on Halloween.
See, it's great. Go. It's definitely worth it. So anyway, wait, you should go out on Halloween, Blue. What do you do? What? What?
I'm the kind of guy that sits in on Halloween with all the lights off and just plays like scary ass games.
Are you going to dress up?
Don't you have trick or treaters? Hey. I guess because you turn the lights off. Huh?
Yeah.
Last year or maybe the year before. I answered the door. There were a number of trick-or-treaters, and that stopped maybe about 9 o'clock. About 10:30, two teenagers came stoned out of their mind asking for candy.
And that is why I turned the lights off.
Something? They were like, nah, it's cool.
You offered them a beer?
Yeah. They were like, they were over 21.
How do you know?
I could tell. They had like wrinkles and shit. Wrinkles? They had like crow's feet. Kind of trick-or-treaters have crow's feet.
What are you guys going to put
on? Red eyes. The same thing. I'll probably just answer the door. Scare the shit out of kids.
So you're going to be yourself.
Yes. Okay. Exactly.
I used to have this neighbor that would sit out in his driveway. And I mean, he would do like this incredible Halloween spectacle every year. You know, just make out his entire yard like a haunted house you could walk through. And I was in the coffin one time with a Batman hood. And I mean, every year.
Is this Halloween Blue?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, this was last week.
And you know, it's like he would dress up, you know, like a mannequin, or he'd have like two mannequins there. Out like sitting in like a lawn chair or whatever, and everybody would think that the mannequin was like the real one. They're like, oh, like that. And then like they'd get a little closer and he'd rev up a chainsaw and chase him all the way down the street with the damn thing.
Oh, wow.
That sounds pretty good.
As an undergrad, I used to spend a lot of time decorating our house in San Bernardino there, and one of the things I did is I woke up real early and I got cheap meat from the grocery store, stuff that was probably brown anyway. And I put that into, you know, the body, and it would look like the liver and organs and things like that. Well, it turned out to be a really hot day, and the meat spoiled. And so when people were walking up, they were like, oh my God, what is this? And I even had a few people gag.
That's so awesome.
Best Halloween ever.
That's pretty good. Jeremy, are you going to dress up with your kids and take them trick-or-treating?
You know, I tend to be the one to stay home and hand out the treats. You know, dressing up is hard when you have a beard is kind of the problem. Because Well, you have a limited stock from which to choose. Actually, I did. I found out that Square Enix actually sells an Adam Jensen jacket.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking about going as Adam Jensen and maybe getting like cutting off the ends of a couple of plastic spoons and like painting them black and putting them over my eyes. And I can even do the voice. I didn't ask for this.
You could be the guy from Game of Thrones, Little.
You could be Oh, I thought you meant Tyrion Lannister.
No. Okay.
You could be Gordon Freeman.
Yes.
Yeah, but he doesn't really do anything. Like, all he does is, like, run around and hit shit with his crowbar while people are trying to talk to him.
How is that not a good
time?
Like,
bang, 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 bang.
How is that not a good time? That sounds like a perfect Halloween.
Put a crab on your head.
And you don't have to say a word.
Yeah,
you don't
exactly.
even have to say trick or treat. You just go hold the crowbar. And
that's true. And somehow I'm able to hold complete conversations with people, even though I don't say anything.
You know, on second thought, if it's people who are not of the gaming generation, they might think you're just mugging them and holding up their house, and they might call the cops. So maybe don't do that.
Did you mug this place?
I am going to post pictures for you guys. My boots and my portal gun are almost done so that I can be chill. And run around with my portal gun.
All right.
And my long fall boots.
Awesome.
Are you going to have a companion cube, whatever the hell those things are called? It's been too long since I played Portal.
I do actually have a tiny, like hand-sized companion cube, so I think I'm going to like tuck it into my jumpsuit or something and have it.
Didn't we get one from E3?
Yes.
Okay.
No. No, I got one at Comic-Con, actually. The anime convention, whatever, non-discon.
Okay.
I don't think I did get one at E3.
So so you're dressing up as a character from a game. Let's talk about games.
Yeah.
Jeremy, well, if we playing any games?
I have been playing some games, many games. If we want to take it back to the sea for a little bit, to the tentacle discussion, I've been playing a recent release, a little-known small downloadable title on PlayStation Network called Derek the Death Finn. Derek the Death Finn is actually a papercraft-themed underwater arcade action, like racing kind of game. It actually reminds me, if any of our listeners are a little bit older and remember playing the original Echo the Dolphin games, it reminds me a little bit of that. You do swim kind of to and fro and hither and thither under the water in these little cavernous areas. You don't have to worry about... No sonar. And you don't have to worry about managing your air level like you do in Echo the Dolphin, which was always kind of stressful for me. Mm-hmm. What you manage instead is Derek is he's a shark, basically. So his parents are in the opening cutscene. They're snatched away by, the evil humans, and they're turned into canned meat. And so he is, it's pretty, pretty disturbing. And
a political message at all? You know, pay attention to what your tuna's really made
kind
of?
Kind of. Well, I mean, a little bit, except it's actually canned shark. So we're actually trying to eat those things.
Oh, but,
where do they serve canned shark?
I guess all around the world, because Derek the Death Finn goes across four worldwide zones. There's the North America, Africa, Asia, and Antarctica, I think, are the four. And there's eight levels in each zone. And instead of managing your air like you do in Echo, you actually will manage kind of like this hunger meter, like this metabolic meter that is counting down pretty quickly, too. Like it's, as you go through the level, you'll come across fish and stingrays and tentacle jellyfish, which is how I got to the tentacles. I just had to make sure you knew how I tied that in. And basically, you'll try and consume all of the... other denizens of the underwater realm as you work your way toward the finish line. There is some variety in this. Sometimes it's, you're always racing against something. So they sometimes have just a standard level where you're racing against your hunger meter. They have some where, you actually are racing against a clock. They actually have a few boss battles, little puzzle interludes as you, when you're talking about the environmentally conscious message, there is a little bit of that, but, because you go to the, I'm trying to remember the name of the company. It's like Mean Corp or something like that.
Blue Piece.
And yes. but it's very light. I mean, like the humans are drilling, and so you break their drill, or they have chemicals, and you spill their chemicals, and then just kind of mess them up. But it's everything is done in this very, very charming sort of papercraft style. It's very tongue in cheek. This game. It's not very serious. It's really like goofy too. It's made in England by a developer called Different Tuna. If you say it with the British accent, it's Different Tuna, like a different tune. Even the loading screens are really just kind of goofy. Like, the typical standard that, the text that you have to have in your game to pass certification for autosave. Like, when you see this, don't power off, reset the console, In this, they have this little floppy disk fish, and it's like, when you see this symbol, don't power off, reset the console, or be afraid. And they have, like, little interstitial loading screens, and they'll have tips like, creating loading tips makes game development feel less lonely, and stuff like that. So,
that's cool.
And they just have that all around, and everybody's very cute, you know, they have these little sleepy papercraft eyes, but then when he's angry, they'll, like, turn slanty, like, slanty angry eyes. And I know this game isn't really getting a lot of publicity or anything like that. I highly recommend, if you're not sure, if you've never heard of Derek the Death Finn, it's just a recent release. Mm-hmm. It's like $7, I think. But if you go to the website, Derek the Death Finn, D-E-R-R-I-C-K, thedeathfinn.com, you can actually see a making of, and this little team putting this game together, they actually made papercraft models of all of these little fish and sharks and, mm-hmm. and all the environmental things. They actually made actual papercraft models, and it's kind of cool. You can actually, they give you a little thing you can print out your own papercraft. And I think that's kind of cool.
Their videos are pretty good, too.
Yeah, they have these cute little
videos. The perspective, they have this one where the shark is facing the killer whale. And they're on strings, and
they make these, they like mock up these little videos and stuff, and they have they fold them up and he floats away on strings and stuff like that. It's just really cute.
Does it have cinematics? Do they have that in the game?
Not anything much more than what you'd see in the video. I mean, the papercraft shark flies around, and it's not like it's photo capture or anything like that. I mean, they actually modeled these papercraft things, and I guess they just wanted it to look authentic. But they say in the videos, and it's kind of funny, they say, you know, nobody's ever really done this, and they're kind of right. Like, there's the closest it gets is maybe like Little Big Planet, where it's like found pieces that you put together and make stuff. But
I've probably played 100 games with paper dolls.
I'm sure you do play with your paper dolls a lot.
Yeah. That was a reference to Nola. Jeremy, I have a question. Is this anything like Joe Danger? You mentioned the racing element and the English pedigree.
A little bit. I mean, most of it is, I mean, the thing about it is that the worst thing I can say about this game is there's not a lot of content. Joe Danger, you kind of have the...
different.
I guess you have that a little bit with this too, where you want to try and perfect the level or learn the mm-hmm. level and really get your best score, because it does keep score, and I think there are even leaderboards. And I don't know. I know that you and Sean are always big and Blue maybe a little bit, but on the leaderboards and how that's this draw. I never really feel that draw. So for those people who don't really have that, you know, you're basically up against 32 levels, and it'll.
I wouldn't know, Jeremy. You're always telling me how bad I was at pinball.
That's true. I do
my 400 point run.
I do follow the leaderboards if Robert is losing terribly. So that's a draw.
And I did think, what was the Vita game that came out for me to play?
I don't know. You're so bad at all kinds of games.
Mister, I don't care about leaderboards.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I'll pay attention when you're
stalking. He's lying. Yeah. He's trolling the leaderboards just to see where you're at, Deagle. He just sits on there like, Deagle went down 2 scores.
The free-to-play one was the Motorstorm RPG. Yeah. And in fact, by the way, Robert, apropos of nothing, I happened to edge you out again on a few levels just this past week.
Thanks.
So.
I still got you at Super Stardust.
On the leaderboard?
Yeah, that's true. Although, so Robert has me there. He did find a little mini game tucked away somewhere in Super Stardust.
No, that's
on
the main game, buddy.
Oh, no. You did, like, what was it? Like, the touchy slidey one or something? And you, like,
I'm talking about the main game.
I didn't even know that game
that's
was in there.
That's the game? Touchy slidey? Because I know that game.
Game
they used
I
to
play all the time. But I'm talking about the main game. I finished the game, and my score is better than yours. The main game.
I don't know. I
got you by at least like right. mil.
Play for the internet.
All right, put your e-penises away for this.
Anyway, so Derek the Death Finn, like I said, I won't recommend that you just go and buy it sight unseen, but definitely go to their website. Check out DerekTheDeathFinn.com. PSN exclusive. It's like $7, something like that. Just go have a look at it. It's at least worth your attention just on the novelty.
So. I just bought it right now so I could beat your leader score.
We'll see.
Oh, it's on, Jeremy.
So, on a totally other end of the spectrum, I've also been playing XCOM Enemy Unknown on the PC, which for me, XCOM is a game that, and I think for those of us who played XCOM, you know, back in the, mid 90s on the PC when it came out, there actually was a PlayStation version, a PlayStation 1 version. Yeah. And I really had wished this was a perfect opportunity for them to re-release. I've always wanted to play XCOM on my PSP, you know, by like streaming it or something like that, or doing it through the Vita. But
the PS1 version is not very good. Stick with the PC.
Yeah, but so the first thing about XCOM that I guess I want to address really quickly is that I've actually seen a lot of people on Twitter and just kind of in general saying that they don't know what XCOM is, which I don't hold against them, and I want to help you. If you don't know what XCOM is, let's talk about the basics of it here for just a minute. XCOM is a turn-based strategy, vaguely RPG-ish tactical combat game against aliens. So you build a squad of Marines, you know, they're not space Marines because you're not in space, but they're like Earth Marines, but
soldiers, defending against,
I mean, they're just soldiery people. They just fight things. And aliens have come from outer space, and the original XCOM kind of built on the whole crop circles and, you know, dissected cattle kind of thing. The XCOM Enemy Unknown kind of just takes that and modernizes it, you know, and kind of makes it better, in my opinion, in almost every way possible. I mean, I feel like this is the best possible reimagining of a game that has held a very untouchable spot in people's hearts for, you know, the last 15 years. And so the thing about this is that you can load your guys out with different kinds of weapons, different equipment, armor, different kinds of things. So I've seen some people kind of compare this to Valkyria Chronicles, but I think for most people it's probably, I like to draw the comparison more to like Final Fantasy Tactics. Everything is grid-based, so you have a particular, you know, range that you can move into. You can then, you know, take shots at people. If you, you know, there's a cover element to it, which is something that they sort of added in Enemy Unknown. It used to be in the old game where, I mean, there were these environments, and they used to have like three environments in the old game. I mean, there was like a forest, a desert, a city, and then you could eventually, you know, there were like some alien spaceships, and sometimes they would invade your base and things like that. But it was very limited, you know, back in the mid-90s. Now they have just like tons of different environments, a lot of interactive stuff. You can take cover, move your guys into position behind all kinds of things, partial cover, full cover. And between turns, you can also set your character into kind of like an Overwatch mode. In the old game, if you had movement points left over, you could, you know, your guys would automatically spend their movement points to shoot anybody who came into view. In this, you actually have a little status that you set for them, and you can use half of your turn to just wait for people to come out and you can shoot them. And the kinds of enemies you're fighting, you know, the classic sort of gray aliens with the big eyeballs, those are called sectoids. They have floaters that are, you know, part machine. They have a new kinds of enemies, thin men, I think, in the new one. Big, tall, stretchy kind of looking guys. And they, even when they're jumping off of buildings and stuff, they do kind of have like this comical sort of stretch that they do. It's kind of just weird
looking. That's from something, right? Aliens called thin men.
Well, there is like the Slender Man.
I thought there was some movie not that long ago where the like crazed conspiracy theory people were like, oh, the thin men, and that meant the aliens. I could be making that up.
Yeah, I actually one time because I found out that there's, for alien people out there who are like really into aliens and Area 51, there's like grays and blues and yellows. There's just like all kinds of weird looking aliens that are sort of in the canon of like really in like the canon of alien invasions and things like that. So
which are the most dangerous?
I think they're all friendly to these people, I guess.
Oh, okay. I want to know which one to shoot first.
Yeah. So
take down the red first.
That's the thing. So here the aliens all have different abilities and different powers. And you can, I mean, one of the reasons why I think XCOM Enemy Unknown is a really great reimagining is that all of the things that we used to do in the old game, like when you were playing, I mean, one of the sort of trademarks or hallmarks of the series is that you can name your characters. And so people would always name their characters like someone that they know. They would, for example, you could load up Sean Nola and just like send him out in the front and like just make sure that he gets killed.
Well, like Oregon Trail.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like dying of dysentery or whatever, you know, it has that same kind of draw. you can just get all of your friends or your enemies and just say, all right, these guys are going to go to die.
I always do that with worms.
Yeah, exactly. Same kind of draw. So in the old game, you pretty much had free reign to load your guys up with whatever equipment they wanted. You didn't really, I mean, everybody was basically, just to go back to the paper dolls, everybody was just like this flat character. And they had kind of some weird hair, like this weird, like, you know, Guile from Street Fighter, they'd have this like kind of like weird, yep, like fountain top head, like air, you know, water shooting straight up and kind of you know, parting at the top or something. It was just kind of weird hair. Anyway, but we would, you know, people who played that game, at least I did, and I feel like a lot of people did this, would tend to, you know, assign this guy, like, this is my heavy weapons guy, so I'm going to make sure that he has a rocket launcher, and I'm going to give him a backpack full of rockets, and he's going to maybe have a sidearm just in case. And this other guy is going to be my sniper. I'm going to give him this weapon or that weapon. And we would sort of say, well, this guy's also the squad leader, so everybody follow him. When in reality, you'd pretty much just offload your guys, and they could pretty much go whatever way they wanted. So there was kind of this want or this desire to, you know, add a little more depth to the characters. And in Enemy Unknown, they really do that. They've actually added an actual leveling process where as you get more kills or as your guys survive more, you know, more battles or more rounds, they'll level up and they'll get actual abilities. So they'll get the ability to do, you know, run and gun, for example, where they can run as far as they possibly can and still have, you know, enough an initiative to shoot someone, or they'll have, you can add medical abilities to some people. They'll become a support class or a heavy class. So all the stuff that we used to do, they sort of internalize that. And you can tell these guys really love the old game. They love the original XCOM because I think that everything they've done to Enemy Unknown has been really an improvement. And they did take some things out. So I've mentioned movement points. They don't have movement points or energy anymore.
I was going to ask you if you mind that they took out inventory management.
Yeah, they did. They did take that out a little bit. And
is that ever fun?
Well, it kind of was, just in the sense of like, you know, like, ah, this guy's going to be my, you know, but not really. I mean, honestly, not really. I mean, in the old game, there used to be a lot of, you know, darkness used to be kind of a thing in the game. And so I would find myself loading up a lot of those little yellow flares, and you would throw them. Yeah. They would have like a trajectory, like a grenade or something, and you could light up areas. And that was actually really cool. So you don't really have that here. You'll just kind of wander forward on the map and eventually uncover, hey, this guy was lurking around. And also,
it has the feeling of more of a battle, of more of a war than kind of hunt the aliens.
Yeah, that's true. And that,
you know, that little bit of that suspense is removed, but it does feel like an epic battle, especially after you're done, the battlefields just get torn to shit.
Yeah, absolutely. Really cool. And I mean, that's like I mentioned earlier, the game, you know, the original PC game had like three environments, but in this, they've got like cars that are upended, and they've got, you know, little, you know, snot covered corpses and things, and just all kinds of, you know, and the traversal in this game, they've actually made a lot more, just a few more steps forward in that. You can crash through windows and kick down doors. And I mean, there's just a lot more
interactivity. Even when you don't really have to.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Sometimes it's fun. And sometimes, like, when you go to do a move, the game will sort of dynamically decide, okay, we're going to zoom in real close on this and do, like, a behind-the-shoulder
roadie
kind of
run.
Thing. Yeah, roadie run, exactly. Or, you know, this guy's going to crash through the window. And, you know, so it'll actually do that. And there's actually more of a story now. There are actually characters, you know, your chief scientist, Dr. Valen or whatever her name is. And then there's your engineer guy. And then there's this other guy. And I think the only thing I don't really like of their additions is your like, main ops guy. Like, he's some dude in, like, a cardigan or something. He's, like, this sweater-wearing guy with his...
Ops guys can't wear sweaters. Have you seen Archer? Hello.
There's just something about this dude that rubs me the wrong way. He's like a total Poindexter. And he's like, oh, yeah, we're going to... It's like, shut up. Like, why do we even need you?
So you're saying smart people can't be ops guys? What are you saying here, man?
Might be. I mean, this guy is he's a square. So I need my ops guy to be a little edgier.
Oh, I see. Okay.
He's got the wrong color.
Red
Argyle
suspenders and shit like
that. I mean, he's probably wearing some suspenders under that sweater, man. You
and a bow tie.
I mean, he's probably.
Hey, I like bow ties actually.
He's a
what?
Nerd. I'm more of
I
a.
I like to wear them, not on other people. Oh, I like to.
Oh. See, I want to bring back the cravat. I want to.
My brother has gone long ways towards bringing back the cravat. And the ascot.
Ascot's a little too much.
Oh, but top. A cravat isn't? That's ridiculous.
I wore a cravat at my wedding.
Well, good for you.
I know.
Picture it didn't happen.
Did you have a monocle as well?
No, but I had a like a Mandarin collar tuxedo and stuff. I was really hot. So.
Oh, nice.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool. Anyway, so XCOM Enemy Unknown, really enjoying that. I wish I could be putting more time into XCOM, but the game that's actually been eating up by far and away the most time lately for me is MechWarrior Online. Which is also on PC, and I've been wanting to talk about MechWarrior Online for a long time. So all those like spaces where I didn't talk about something, it's probably because I wanted to talk about MechWarrior Online. for me, MechWarrior is one of those games that for me goes way back, like you know, all the way back to even a lot of people played MechWarrior 2, but I played like the original EGA MechWarrior that used to be like kind of an adventure sort of game with little matches in between. Mm-hmm. And so for those who aren't familiar with it, MechWarrior as a series is, it's a little bit like a flight simulator on the ground, except with giant two-legged stompy battle armor mech things. So
I'm thinking Steel Battalion.
A little bit. But MechWarrior is way better than Steel Battalion. MechWarrior is better than everything.
But does it have a 137 button controller?
Actually, it's kind of funny. The Razer people, they actually do have, and I don't know if it's actually gonna come to pass, but they actually have this concept for almost like the Steel Battalion controller. Maybe not as big, but it's got like this joystick on one side and a little radar thing down at the bottom. I don't know what they're gonna do with it, but it looks intense, and it's got a little keypad on the side. But yeah, so in MechWarrior Online, so the neat thing about MechWarrior Online is that it is, I guess I should say, it's still in private beta right now. They're going to be doing public beta here shortly. But the game is basically a 8-on-8 sort of combination deathmatch slash capture the flag, or I guess capture the point, I guess. So you can capture a base by like sitting on a particular capture point and you know, just letting the ticker count down. But the cool thing is that you can basically choose from amongst a series of different mechs, you know, light, medium, heavy, and assault class mechs. If you've ever seen anything to do with MechWarrior, you probably recognize the Atlas with the big skull face and the, you know, usually they have battle damage with the arm blown off or something like that. And it's really neat because you get in there. This is the first game that's like really truly multiplayer. There have been other sort of fan-made, you know, MechWarrior Legacy something or other, and they had a some sort of hack of MechWarrior 4, but this is the first legitimate actual MechWarrior game that is pretty much just all live people. And so one thing that's different for those who played the old games is that you used to have a tendency just to kind of be able to just like stomp in and pretty much just take people out, you know, that you were just fighting against the AI, so you'd pretty well be able to take people out. But in this case, everybody on the other team is a live person, and chances are they're just as smart as you and possibly even smarter than you. So you really have to work from a tactical standpoint to coordinate with your lance or your company of mechs. And they have long-range weapons, you know, LRM racks that you can fire off as long as somebody has a target. They've got short-range autocannon, you know, which is basically like a big hunk of – like a pirate cannon, except it auto-loads, you know. I mean, it's basically just throws a big slug at people. You know, laser weapons, all that kind of stuff. It's all in there. You can customize your mech. You know, between matches, you have the ability to fit different kinds of weapons to your set hardpoints. So the free to play thing that comes in here is that they will have the option for you to buy new mechs with either real actual money, so you can buy MechWarrior credits or MCs, or there's an in-game currency, C-bills, and mechs are pretty expensive. So, you know, you can pretty much achieve any of the same chassis as anybody else. It's just a question of time, basically. Inside the game, so it's not, you know, I know that when you say free-to-play, people tend to get a little bit nervous that it's like pay-to-win. But in this case, the only thing you can do repairs and reloads with are in-game currency that you win during matches. You know, you get salvage, or you just get an award, you know, bonuses for spotting or for victory or for different conditions. And then between matches, you just tweak your loadout and you can coordinate with your lance mates and decide, okay, how are we going to do it this time? All right, you're going to be our long range guy. You're going to be our scout, you know, light mechs, Jenners, things like that. Mm-hmm. And you basically just go in and do it again. And it is in, like I said, private beta right now. But they took the NDA off, which is why I can talk about it now. So, and I've just been wanting to talk about it so much because I am just playing a ton of this. This is the first time in my life, like, I stay away generally from MMOs, not because I don't like them, but just because I don't have the time for it. But this is the one game since I think the last MMO I played was like City of Heroes or something. I mean, it was a long time ago. And before that, it was Ultima Online. But in this case, I want to make this my game. Like, I'm going to actually be competitive. I've talked to, you know, on Twitter, I follow a couple people who are, like, major league gaming people. And I want to be like, okay, how do you train for this? Like, I want to get a competitive squad of people here. How do you guys practice? Like, what do you do? And, no, like really, like, no, I am going
forward. You're going to be their disciple.
Take me under
your wing or whatever mechs have.
Whatever that. Well, here's the thing.
So, your fortified arm.
And I'm teaching other people. So the thing is, I mean, you if you're going it alone, you kind of don't have a really great experience because everybody kind of scatters and you get isolated and killed and stuff like that. So I basically have – I'm roping in all of my friends to play MechWarrior Online. So if anybody out there wants to play MechWarrior Online and you can get into the beta or a public beta comes up, let me know.
I do.
Yeah.
So do I. How
graphically intensive is it?
Actually, the cool thing about it is they're actually using kind of interesting. They're using CryEngine 3. Actually, they just updated it to CryEngine 4, so now they're actually having some bugs with it. But it's kind of neat to have a game that doesn't look like it's been dipped in Vaseline for once. So I am running on a PC that is not really great. I mean, it's probably a good 3 years old at this point, and I can run it pretty comfortably. I mean, the loading takes a second. You know, I'm usually the last one or last two or three to load into a match, but once it gets going, it's nice and smooth. They have a lot of options to set the you know, the visual settings up or down. And it's just a good time. But I have to admit, you know, I've been talking about it being free to play, but I have to admit something here publicly. I've got to get it out of my system. I don't pre-order a lot of games. I don't pre-order anything. This year's been a little bit weird for me. In fact, the last 2 to 3 months, because I actually pre-ordered XCOM before it came out. I got it on the Steam thing where they actually threw in a copy of Civ 5, which I'll never have time to play. but I also did the pre-order, what they call the Founders package for MechWarrior Online. They had three different tiers. You could have done $30, $60, or $120. And yeah, I kind of went in whole hog this time. So
nice.
Balls
first. I spent $120 on a free game that is not actually available yet and probably won't be. They say it's going to launch.
Well, that's cool. Tell me what you got for your money.
Well, they give you so they have a set of Founders mechs that you can get, which are basically just the normal mechs, but just with different variants and paint jobs. So it's sort of a vanity thing. You do get some XP bonuses. So as you're playing, you're not only worrying about your mech, but they actually let you customize your sort of – They call it your pilot, but it's basically like you. You know, you don't manage different pilots, but you in different mechs can have different skills. So
now will your XP carry over when it goes live?
No. Well, they're gonna wipe it when they in fact they wipe it pretty regularly since it's beta. In fact, they're wiping it this weekend, I think, again. But once the game actually starts and goes live, I'm sure they're going to be starting everybody out at square one. But so they do wipe that stuff. But it's kind of interesting because in order to progress, they kind of make it so that you have to gain skills. You don't gain skills for yourself. You gain skills in different chassis. So, like, for example, I really like to go in a mech called a Hunchback, which has a big gun on sort of one side of it. And you have to, in order to progress in different tiers of skills. So they have skills like, starting up fast off the line where, you know, your acceleration is really fast or your stopping is really fast or your turning speed is faster. And in order for you to progress to more, advanced skills, you have to fill out the basic slots for three different chassis. So you can't really like just get in one and just overpower that. You pretty much are going to have to. In fact, you have a limited number of mechs that you can have in your mech bays at any given time. You know, you can't just load up on 100 different kinds of mechs. So chances are that if you really want to progress in a particular kind of mech, you're going to have to buy and sell your different mechs. You're going to have to really manage kind of what you want. So they're really going for kind of the long game, I think, in this. I mean, obviously, they don't want everybody to be able to, you know, to just eat up all the content and be done with it.
How robust is the customization? I'm thinking of like Forza with the paint jobs what's the other popular Armored Core as far as like customization where you have thousands of different parts and things like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're in the sort of Battletech canon. You know, mm-hmm. there are a limited number of components. But for example, in you know different. So what makes mechs have different variants is that they have different kinds of hardpoints. So on you know on the shoulder piece on the Hunchback I was talking about, you could have a ballistic piece there where you get a big cannon. Mm-hmm. You could have an energy piece where you get lasers or particle projection cannons, or you can get like missiles. You know, missile racks. So you're limited there in that you know different kinds of weapons have to be fit to different chassis. So you get one variant that has a certain loadout, another variant that has another loadout. You can actually fit to a particular kind of hardpoint. So on an energy hardpoint, you can do medium, large, small, pulse lasers, things like that. Mm-hmm. You can do other kinds of weapons. But then you also can customize how much armor per, you know, mechs are sort of divided into different parts, like left arm, right arm, center right. torso, right mm-hmm. torso. And so you can decide, well, how much armor do I want to take? What kind of engine do I want in there? Do mm-hmm. I want a bigger, heavier engine? Mm-hmm. But you know what, if I got a slower engine, I might be able to fit in more ammunition here. Right. Or, you know, do I want an anti-missile system? Do I want a countermeasure system in there?
And these are all Western mechs, so no plasma swords.
Yeah. No plasma swords. No, like, I mean, that. So that's one thing. So for some of the listeners who are kind of more, you know, Oriental in their leanings,
Jesus, you know,
Jeremy. What the
racist?
Hell?
Well, no. Like, I was trying to think of a non-racist way to say that, but people, you know, people who really okay. So
for Mecca. Out there,
yeah, if you're a real weeaboo and you really just prefer Japanese stuff,
that's this, even worse.
I know it is. It is really offensive, so I'm sorry if I offended you. If
what
you're a
is
weeaboo,
it? What is a weeaboo? I don't know what that is.
It's just called every week on the site.
It actually comes from. Do you know where that comes from, Robert?
It actually comes from our readers and listeners.
No, it actually comes from a really great webcomic called The Perry Bible Fellowship. And it actually has nothing to do with Japan at all. There's a comic strip where the guy's like, oh, it's time for weeaboo. What is it? And everyone's all excited. And it basically turns out they pull this guy's pants down and slap him with a paddle.
Mm-hmm. What the
like, weeaboo. Anyway, check out Perry Bible Fellowship.
Front or back?
Back.
Okay.
I don't get it.
Anyway, so there's no, like, you know, jet skating around. I mean, these are, like, hulking, like, tanks. I mean, they're basically tanks on legs. They're not robots or androids or anything like that. So if you've ever played a Battletech game or a MechWarrior game, highly recommend looking into
it. Are there jump jets?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay. They're jump jets. But it's not like, you know...
Screaming around.
Yeah, no, it's more like I want to get up to a particular vantage point. I need more mobility. And they're going to be adding in things like, you know, if you've ever played the tabletop game, which nobody who's listening to this ever played. If you played the tabletop game of Battletech, you let me know because I will give you some mad props. But, you know, you can do... There are actually attacks you can do, like Death from Above, where you actually jump up and you know, land on someone and cause physical damage to them that way. They're talking about eventually adding in... actual melee combat, because there are some mechs like Axeman who you know actually carries around a literal actual axe and you can actually hit people with it.
Cool.
Yeah. So I mean, these guys who are making this game, it's Piranha Games in Toronto, I think, and you can tell. I mean, and they even you know they talk about it in their forum posts and in their weekly updates and things. Like, they really love that franchise. They love the property of BattleTech. And so they look at the when they're trying to balance all this stuff and figure out like what's the economy going to be or what kinds of you know options are we going to give for people. They look back at the tabletop game, or they look at the role playing source material, or they look at you know previous games in the series, and they want to make it legit. Like, they want to make it feel and work and operate the way that you know BattleTech and MechWarrior people really want it to work. And I really respect that. I mean, they, you know, like I said, it's still in beta, so some things are still forthcoming. There's some things that they say, you know, it's going to be really hard. Eventually they want to have factions, you know, so for people who are familiar with the fiction, there's, you know, the right now it's Inner Sphere only, so that will mean something to people who are into it. But you know, you can choose a faction, you know, Federated Sons, Steiner, Liao, Kurita, things like that. Right now they don't know what it's going to do yet. They talk about having like faction warfare and they don't really know, are you going to get certain bonuses? Is certain technology only going to be available to certain houses, or how's that going to work? And they haven't really done that yet. Like I said, it's a work in progress, but you know, my group that I run with, we have a lot of fun. Even when we lose, it's a blast. And it's
I think
fun.
They should do some product placement, and Mickey D's can take on KFC. You'd have big advertisements plastered all over your mech.
Yeah.
I'm going to deliver the Whopper on you.
So you asked me.
It's a giant sandwich.
That's what the future is. Fast moving organizations say, like using mechs to battle.
Sounds like the future in real life, in fact.
Yeah.
The inflation is a thing there. C-bills are theoretically like 100 credit bills, but it takes like millions of C-bills to buy anything. So, yeah, the economy kind of goes downhill.
Is that it for you for the year? Are you going to get anything else?
I think I'm still looking forward to Assassin's Creed, but I think Assassin's Creed will probably do it for me. I'm trying to think if there's anything.
Are you going to get Liberation too?
Yeah, I do want that. I'm still, you know, I know that last week we ended on a little bit of a downer on the Vita, but for me, the Vita's still my number one platform right now.
Right.
The other thing that I've been playing a lot of is Retro City Rampage.
Yep.
Which is $15 on PlayStation Network, Steam, and I think it's coming out later on Xbox.
And
WiiWare. Yeah, that's right. And interesting thing about Retro City Rampage is that, you know, we talk a lot about, I'm trying to think back to when this whole, 8-bit/16-bit kind of retro, like, oh, we're going to go back and recreate some of this. I'm trying to think about when that started, but I don't think anything that I played, not Scott Pilgrim, not anything, really feels quite as legitimately retro as Retro City Rampage.
3D Dot Heroes.
You know, that had that
I totally I fucked mean, up that name.
Yeah, and of course, you know, that one is not quite. I mean, that had a feel to it, but I mean, it was not like a recreation of, you know, an 8-bit game. And it seems to me, and you know, maybe I'm looking at this. I haven't played any legitimate 8-bit games in a long time, but Retro City Rampage is a kind of a combination of Grand Theft Auto, like original old Grand Theft Auto, top-down Grand Theft Auto, and like every 8-bit trope, or every
80s,
like,
movies,
yeah, like not everything, like, you know, I think
they even go through the 90s. They hit some stuff that I swear was part of the 90s. So.
And it's hard to keep track of it all, you know.
You'll go crazy if you try.
I did go crazy. Like, I felt a literal vertigo the first probably 30 minutes that I played this, because I was just like trying to absorb everything.
Have you ever seen what's his name? Mickey's Dead or Alive? Not based on the game, but there's an opening sequence where it's just like a rapid fire montage, and it's just like, you know, 10 minutes of the most intense, I don't know, imagery that you've ever seen. And you're like, shit, I hope this ends because I can't take it anymore. And that's kind of the way I felt
Intense is a great word for it. But I wonder, for people who are immune to it, like people who don't, you know, we sort of talked about this a couple of episodes ago with Double Dragon also. Yeah. Like, I'd be interested to know somebody who has the immunity to that, because the references just fly over. But even then, I'm sure you could tell, like, hey, there's something's going on here, and I might not be catching it. But
almost blink if you miss it. Like, there's Bomberman for a second who comes out.
Yes, and like so the game is essentially, you're this little 8-bit dude, and you have player, and he's just sort of this straw man for, you know, just any character that you might have been, sort of like the Grand Theft Auto 3 guy who never really had a name. But you basically have an open environment that's, you know, there's a limit to it, but it basically is an open world game, and they have story missions, you know, where you are, I mean, there's time travel involved with this, there's missions are very reminiscent of something that you might do in a Grand Theft Auto game. I mean, you know, go repo these cars, or God help
escort
me out with
escort mission.
Yeah, escort mission.
Which
that was
kind of killed it for me. I didn't, because it seemed like, and I think I talked about, he did like a Suda 51 where he was critiquing the escort mission, like, aha, the escort mission's so cliched, but I'm gonna make you follow that cliche. And I really didn't, you know, I felt like the joke was on me.
Well, and that's an interesting thing, too, because the thing that I think, I mean, the 8-bit is interesting and the references are interesting, but the thing that I find really kind of worth thinking about and looking at is the fact that they have taken, it's not just the references, but the actual gameplay styles and the way that you interact with the game. I mean, there are a lot of different things there. I mean, there's like Ikari Warriors, there's like
Paperboy Tapper.
Yeah, there's a Paperboy level. Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. There's a Contra style thing.
Yeah.
And they do all of this within this one engine. I mean, they've actually added cover. There's a cover mechanic.
Smash TV. too.
Yeah, and there's this little tiny dude, and you can actually kind of see what's going on. I mean, that, you know, one thing I have to hand the guy is that he's somehow managed to pack
a lot,
you know, in the same way that we in the same way that we used to be able to look at that original little Super Mario, and when he was tiny Mario, and you know, they used the color because he has a mustache because they wanted to break up his face or something like that. You know, that same kind of idea is done here, and obviously they're kind of faking it, but still everything is so tiny, especially on the Vita.
It's almost like when someone paints a name on a grain of rice. There's just so much detail in a very small finite area that you have to appreciate that.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the different gameplay styles, I think probably the biggest criticism you could have is that I think it's, you know, I use the word mistake. I think it's a mistake to do it, but I don't want to say that he shouldn't have done it. I think he fully knew, you know, what was happening there here when they were making this. But all that's probably the weirdest thing about it is that this one engine is used to kind of replicate a lot of different kinds of games. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's terrible either. I mean, it might be a mistake, but it's not like a bad mistake. It's just like, wow, that was weird. Because the other thing that's kind of neat about it is you're never doing one thing for too long.
Yeah.
I mean, it is definitely very bite-sized. And that's one reason why I really like it on the Vita, is that I can do a mission. Mm-hmm. You know, there was... And sometimes I can go back and do the same mission again. I mean, there's this one mission right at the beginning where... And I don't even know what this might be a reference to, but there's a mission where you have to go and get a vehicle, but it's actually like this bare-assed ape that you go and you run around. And it's like this amazingly powerful thing, because you drive around the streets and it just crashes everything, and guys with rocket launchers are chasing you.
Did you say an ape?
Yes, a bare-assed ape.
Like a baboon?
Like a simian that you rock.
Okay.
Vehicle.
Okay.
Wasn't the sprite for that originally like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles van or something like
that?
I think.
No, that's in there. That's in there. You can try that. Fire as guns.
Even the opening screen, the music sounds. I mean, the music sounds just like that original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game. And they have lots of references to people.
Movies.
You know, I mean, yeah, movies.
Bill and Ted, Back to the Future.
Yeah, there's
Red Dawn. Yeah,
dude, I almost started to like write this down, but it made me physically ill trying to keep up with all of it.
Is it like Gex as far as like the incorporation of the spoofiness of all those things, or is it more just like referential?
Gosh, it's been a while since I played Gex, but.
Gex is classic.
I might have to return to Gex.
I mean, like every text box, everything that someone says has some kind of reference in it. I mean, it is rare that someone just comes out straight and says some, you know, like, here, go do this mission. There's some reference in everything they say.
Sweet.
I mean, there's at one point you have to go steal this guy's car, and it's like Kit from Knight Rider. And the guy's like Boss Hoff, which could be a reference to Boss Hogg, but it's also
the Hoff? Hasselhoff?
Yeah, David Hasselhoff, yes. I mean, there's something about a cheeseburger, like he left his cheeseburger in there, and that's probably a reference to something. I have no idea what it is.
I can has a cheeseburger.
Maybe. I don't know.
Or eating the cheeseburger on the floor of the bathroom like David Hasselhoff was doing drunk a couple of years
ago. Oh, jeez.
Yes. Okay, so see, there it is. So it's only on, you know, and they kind of, people have said like, oh, this is a love letter to all of this stuff. It's more like love vomit. I mean, I could imagine like, I could imagine this guy like sitting down and probably like in real time, like in the 3 years or however long it took him to develop it. Maybe it's there's like this actual like, you know.
Do you think he speaks as fast as Quentin Tarantino?
I don't know.
he's like the Tarantino of video games.
But see, here's the thing: his 3 years of coming up with references, like he sits down and has a comfortable dinner. Like I bet I could fit a David Hasselhoff reference into this. Sure. But for us, it's like, oh my god, David Hasselhoff! Oh my god, now it's Bill and Ted! Oh my god. You know,
I think it'd be a little harsh on it, Jeremy. I guess my one critique is that it probably won't stand the test of time. Like those things will get really dated in a few more years, right?
Not Another Teen movies are really funny references, but then they fade away.
I was talking to a 19-year-old, and he had no idea who Arsenio Hall was. And I'm like,
Well, the references in there are 30 years old now. So,
I'm wondering if you know, maybe the core Vita PlayStation 3 audience, if they really get it, because it just kind of sounds like
It's fun.
I mean, it is retro, so it's probably targeted to the market that grew up with it.
Maybe. But the other thing is that you guys are overlooking that's a really good way to keep the younger generation's informed about those things. Because if they don't get the reference, they're going to ask someone older than them who does. Well, and like then they'll know
Jeremy's what that is. Saying they would have, hey, Dad, I have 250 questions for you.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know if you could ever be informed. I mean, I don't think you
can start from Panorama.
It would be interesting, though. I wonder if the guy himself, like, kept a list of what all of his references are. I wonder if there – I mean, there has to be a finite number in here somewhere, but I just don't know if we have the physical capability of identifying that.
Maybe it'll be DLC.
Yeah, I don't know.
The DLC is just a list. It's not more gameplay. It's just a list of all the shit that's in the game.
32 megabyte text file.
Have so, that or so, it does like pop-ups as you see these things and like the entire screen gets covered. Okay, this is a reference to this and this one's to Back in the Future. And
cool. I literally almost, and you know what, there's probably, we should check YouTube, somebody's probably done it by now, but I mean there must be. I started to like, okay, I should write this down and like just tick off all the check marks for all the things that get referenced here, but I just could not keep up with it. But you know, all of that said, I think it's, you know,
Jeremy, did you, this is totally off topic, but yeah. Did you see the video of Baby Got Back created by different movie clips?
I saw
because
the
same thing kind of happened to me where I'm like, okay, is it that movie? I'm trying to name the movies that it came from, and it almost had the same sensation where it's just overwhelming.
I haven't seen it, but I think that's worth linking in the show notes.
Okay,
you should put it there and then we can all look at it.
It's like
it.
Baby Got Back is done by the movies.
Yeah, I did see the link for that, but I couldn't bring myself to click on it. So, but anyway, Retro City Rampage, if the idea of a legitimate open world 8-bit game with pretty good, I mean, like I said, it's got cover mechanics, it's got lock-on, like auto-lock-on, you know, and you can do your missions in like 5 minutes each. If that kind of thing appeals to you or you think it might appeal to you, the music is awesome. You know, I think you can get the soundtrack for download from the website. Go check it out, see if it's the kind of thing you're interested in. It's $15, but you get the Vita and the PS3 version together. They do have cross-save. You can save on one and pick it up on the other one. Really neat. I mean, it's just chock full of stuff. I mean, for the $15, it's at least worth looking at. But I started out a little weirded out by it, but the more I've played it, the more I think I've been enjoying it. All right, and then very last, I've been taking a lot of time, but since we talked about FTL, the other thing that I've been playing, we didn't get to talk about this last time, but Tokyo Jungle, which is, we'll try and keep it brief here, but I think probably by now everybody knows about Tokyo Jungle. It is a kind of a side-scrolling, vaguely 3D, there's kind of a depth to it, kind of survival, how would you describe this? Like
I think I described it on Twitter. Sean, appreciate it. Mount Howl fade to black.
Yeah, right. So the idea of
that's
Tokyo Jungle.
That's my favorite part of the game.
Yeah, and actually my wife, I was showing, I was like, this, look at this. You actually can make him hump. And she's like, really? I'm like, yeah, watch this. And that's exactly what happens. Like, they kind of get up on and it like. Yeah. She's like, oh my God, I can't believe they did that. I said, well, that's nature. But,
so that was worth the price of admission for me.
Yeah, it was. It was a lovely moment to share with my wife, these dogs humping.
And how does she feel about you now? Still happy she married you?
Well, you know, I guess doggy
style.
I'm
just kidding, Jeremy. Oh, wow.
You've been playing Mech Warrior these.
Honey, I have something to show you.
Yeah, does it give you any ideas? So Tokyo Jungle, the idea of it is you get to be an animal. You start out as the Pomeranian, the most ferocious of, or you can start, I think, Sika deer is the other one that you can be. So you have these animals that you can be, and every animal, whether it's a carnivore or an herbivore, your goal is to survive and to thrive in this toxic,
predator
metro. Yeah, exactly. So the reason why
kind of like Spore a little bit.
No, kind of like FTL actually. In the sense that you essentially have basically one life, but the map is the same. And the events, the things that happen in the map are actually, maybe they're not randomized, you know, come to think of it. There may not be a real random element to it. No. But the idea is that you are essentially always underpowered and trying to claw your way up through this hierarchy of animals and situations. So you basically accumulate calories kind of in the same way that Derek the Deathfin does, but you level up your animal, your beast, by by either attacking, stalking. If you're a carnivore, like a Pomeranian, of course, the ferocious hunter, you will try and sneak up on bunnies and
or
you know,
a cat laying on a warm automobile roof. That was my favorite kill.
That's something you can do is be a cat and lay on a car.
No. There was a cat on a car, and you sneak up. There's a stealth element, right? You sneak up on animals, and you go from bush to bush. And you sneak up on them. and then the mechanics of fighting are actually fairly well played, where you have you try to strike, and then there's kind of real-time event. You see these fangs, and when they turn, I think it's red, that gives you your mark, and then that's kind of an instant kill.
Or there's a dodge, and it sort of throws the other person off balance, and then you can get an instant kill. So it's very twitchy, and you have to be really careful. So it's got that sort of
nervous
and I'm not sure I was trying to think again about the whole roguelike thing, because I was thinking about this in one sense as a roguelike, but maybe now that I'm thinking about it, it doesn't really fit the bill. But
if it was randomized, I could see that. Randomized, and wouldn't that be awesome just to have like a random environment where you don't know what's going to be around the corner,
but you have to
infinite
deal
with replay value.
Yeah, exactly.
And so as you level up your character, eventually you can find a mate and actually you can do the thing. That's right. And then you will spawn a litter of whatever your next generation is. And then you become that litter of, well, it's not real. I mean, they don't show it, but, you know, I mean, there's no.
Sounds
to black. No.
Yeah, it does fade to black. I mean,
the circle of life.
That's right. That's exactly what it is. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And so
then John in there?
Your little brood then marches off, and you try and essentially take more territory. So you unmark your territory. So you pee on things, Sage.
Is this a guy thing? Do you guys have these animalistic urges to do this, and that's why you like this game? Because I gotta say, it's not sounding so appealing to me.
I like pissing on stuff and mating.
I wanna rut and piss on everything.
Here's a game, and fuck things up, kill it, and eat it.
That's why
I like this game so much.
I still don't understand how a Pomeranian can sneak up on a cat. I mean, my dog is anything but stealthy.
Well, you got to give it some
grain of salt, pound
of
salt.
Like, did you ever hear Norm MacDonald, the comedian, talk about his wiener dog? The wiener dog.
No, but I saw a wiener dog in a hot dog bun earlier today.
Aw, well, see, the thing is, you can dress up your animals in different outfits, too. And the outfits will give you different little bonuses to things, like you might get more hit points, or you might get, an added attack or stealth benefit. Like, you can actually put, you know, cat paws on a cat, like stuffed cat paws on a regular cat, and it'll give the cat an extra bonus or something like that. And so as you play the survival modes, you can actually unlock the story mode and unlock more and more kinds of animals. And there's tons of animals in this. I mean, there's different kinds of
animals.
Like dogs and
DLC
deer
animals coming out, but no poodles.
Also, they're going to have like Loco Rocos, I think you can get.
That's cool.
And just like all kinds of stuff, and the levels are just different, and it's really difficult. Like, I just die a lot, but I kind of don't mind it, and I like to go back and just try it again and see if I can be a little more careful next time, or like try and type this.
What are you dying from, Jeremy?
All kinds of stuff. Like
lack of nutrients. I take out an area. It's not the enemies. Like I'll be pretty smart about the enemies. I won't take out a pack of the hyenas. But I'll run out of food pretty quickly.
Yeah, and you have to, and like they don't respawn either, I don't think. So you have to really be careful, and you might be down in the street, or you might go up an alley, or sometimes you can go up on a roof and you might find a bonanza there, and you kind of have to be smart about that too, because you have to decide like, when do I need to end this level? Like, when is the time to move on? Because when you start out a new generation, I believe then it'll respawn different things, and you kind of can keep going again and kind of.
Then there's the whole experience. Did we talk about that? The experience levels by how much you eat, how much.
Like you can get different. Yeah, that so that's the thing. So depending, they kind of have this sort of gene passing idea by however many calories you eat before you mate, like you then pass along certain traits.
Again, ties into the.
Yeah, it does. Food. So we got the pissing, the eating.
I like a good meal before I mate.
This is a game for guys.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone talk about it. A lot of things are becoming clear to me now about Tokyo Jungle. The ultimate
Freudian game.
It is kind of like this dude game. I thought it had a lot of mass appeal, but maybe you have to have a penis.
Sage.
Yeah, sorry
Shit.
About that.
does a strap-on count? Can I go get one and then I'll play?
You know what? if you try it, let us know how it goes.
I will.
You need the extra joystick.
Yeah. Attachable joystick?
Anyway, Tokyo Jungle, it also has, it's just a really weird game too. Like, it just has this weird vibe to it. And I don't like to be a, you know, one of those people who says, oh, I like something before it got popular, but it really kind of hit over here, and I'm really glad it came here. They showed it at Tokyo Game Show like 2 years ago. And as soon as I saw the Pomeranian artwork in the sweater, like kicking ass and like doing all the stuff, I was like, we have to have this here. Please, please bring this here. And they brought it here, and it's really pretty good. Like, it kind of against all odds. Like, I don't think it's as weird as you, Jeremy. You don't think so?
No, I think...
Not as weird as Jeremy is?
No, I think, well, I mean, beyond the basic, you know, appeals to guys. I don't know, that whole survival instinct and, you know, it's animals fighting each other, which has been done to death, you know, many other games. I don't think it's really that strange.
I think it's a nice amalgam of ideas. Yeah,
but you're also a lot more Japanese than Jeremy is.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get the sensation that this game's super, you know, Japanese.
Really? Because I did kind of get like a weird, like, you know, like a sweary kind of, you know, I don't know. There's just this kind of weirdness to it, you know.
Okay. Maybe if the animals talked.
Maybe. I don't know. Kind of
like,
you know,
Sailor Moon earbuds or...
Like, not weird wacky, like, I'm not talking about like a
beat.
Yeah, like not a what's the really gay side scrolling shooter, like, it's not
Chouaniki.
Yes, it's not like Chouaniki weird, it's more like Kojima kind of weird,
I guess. Okay.
You don't think so? Like, where the, you know, you see the ghost of Kojima in the cloud that comes up from the urine or something like that.
That's a little bit more weird.
It is.
I just think this is. I mean, gosh, you know, just animals fighting, primal rage, and dinosaurs fighting. It doesn't, you know, it's a survival.
Yeah, there's dinosaurs.
Yeah. So.
What exactly is the scenario to it? I mean, how did like the world end and there are dinosaurs?
Well, so you actually will pick up little notes from like zookeepers and veterinarians and things like that. Like, oh, the animals are acting weird, and you actually piece together the kind of the story. It's kind of a dark.
Did you see Aibo?
No, I didn't.
I know. I've been looking for that too.
I don't even know, because you can't download it. I don't know how to unlock it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it definitely is one of those things where you kind of have to want to be challenged. So if you're not, if that kind of thing doesn't really appeal to you, and you'd rather just kind of be taken through the story, I mean, this is definitely like a, here's this level, you're going to beat it or you won't, you know, and then you try something else, beat your head against something else. I mean, it's definitely got that kind of thing to it. So I could see how to
some people. I saw some reviewers gave it a really low score, like a 3 out of 10, 4 out of 10. That's the feeling I thought was, okay, I could see this isn't really somebody's cup of tea, but could I imagine anyone giving it below a 5 or a 6 even?
Well, I have a hard time really criticizing people for their opinions on that. And I know that like there's this weird dynamic in the reviewer and reader community where, you know, readers will you were talking about your Dishonored review, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, how could you give this a B+? Like, who in their right mind would give a B+? But by the same token, like, if somebody really doesn't like something, like, okay, I can sort of see that.
I can't see how someone wouldn't like this game. I mean,
I don't know. I definitely could see why somebody might not like it. Here's my criteria, though. I mean, to really judge a game fairly, here's my personal criteria, which is that if you look at what a game was trying to do, like what did they set out to do with this game, whether or not it's your personal thing, you know, whether you like it, you know, how successful were they at making the game that they wanted to make. Mm-hmm. And the process of review is kind of taking that and picking it apart and trying to determine, well, what was it that they were trying to do and where did they not live up to that? Mm-hmm. And in that sense, I think Tokyo Jungle does exactly what they set out to do. I mean, at its core, it's a really simple game. I mean, you know, you're this particular animal, mm-hmm. and you eat this one kind of thing and you stay away from this other kind of thing. And that's it. Like, mm-hmm. That's pretty much all there is to it. So it's pretty hard.
Pokemon boiled down to its core. Elements.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like, you know,
you fight other animals. Yeah, you try to collect different animals. Sure.
Yeah, and maybe like I could maybe see the combat maybe, but it's pretty tight. I mean, they do what they.
There is kind of a rock, scissors, paper dynamic to it.
Yeah. So from that standpoint, like I could see why somebody would. I mean, ultimately, the criteria for a game is, are you having fun with it? And if somebody's absolutely not having fun with it, you know, again, you can like it or not like it. I think scores should be given based on, you know, is the game what it set out to be? Is it the best kind of Tokyo Jungle that it could have been? I have a hard time, though, ever really calling somebody out for a review that they've done.
7.0 needs poodles.
Yeah, needs more poodles.
Well, they are the second smartest dog, so I mean.
That's right. I want to take over the world with a hamster. Blue, what do you got?
Well, first of all, since we were talking tentacles, I found out that apparently my mom is friends with one of the English voices from La Blue Girl.
Oh, God.
I don't know how the hell that came about. But...
for dinner?
That's a good question.
Do it.
Anyways, just a little tidbit I wanted to throw in there. I've been playing a little game called Happy Wars. It's I believe it's being marketed as the first free-to-play Xbox Live arcade game.
Yeah.
And
I played a bit of it, too.
Huh?
I played a little bit today. It reminded me of Fat Princess.
Yeah, that's what I've. That's another comparison I've heard to it. It kind of, from an aesthetic standpoint, it's almost like a medieval Animal Crossing,
yeah,
crossed with almost like Dynasty Warriors a little bit.
Yeah.
And basically, you have your character. You have three different classes: a warrior, a cleric, and a mage.
Yeah.
And I honestly really didn't experiment with the classes too much. Both because I was getting into a good groove with the warrior, and the game is exclusively for Xbox Live Gold members, and my subscription ran out recently, so I can't even play the single player. It's like, if you do not have Xbox Live Gold, you can't even pass the title screen.
Can we talk about that for just a minute, like just for 1 second? Because is anybody else offended to their very core that they are promoting this as a free-to-play game that is behind the paywall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems a little troubling.
It seems douchey. Like,
it seems extremely troubling, especially because they actually have free content on Xbox Live. They have those, you know, the Doritos game and the, what's the game where you can race around but also shoot at people?
They had the Prius game, or no? Was it?
Yeah,
Prius?
Yaris versus Yaris.
Yaris Revenge.
If they could give us Yaris for free, they've pretty well established what free is. Right.
The Dorito game actually is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's called, I wish I could think of this other one, because it's kind of like MotorStorm, except with turrets that you can shoot the guys.
Yeah, I have it too, and I can't think of the name of it either.
There was a shmup that was free also.
Yeah. So it really, really bothers me, especially since I've been talking about free-to-play. I mean, I don't mind that a game is free and then has microtransactions. Like, that I can totally understand.
Sure,
but certainly. You cannot play this game unless you have paid them money to play it.
Well, mostly what bothers me is the advertising dishonesty. Like, I don't care that they have a game that they say, like, free-to-play for our live members, like, that would be more fair, but that they're like, free-to-play, and then you get there and they're like, you need a subscription.
Yeah, and they've
been
free-to-play
once you pay.
Like, yeah. The free-to-play comes to Xbox. Shut up. Like, really. I am really bothered by it, and I don't
hear
feel
that.
Like,
you've offended Jeremy.
Me too.
The thing that's even worse is, has anybody called him out on that at all?
It kind of doesn't
seem like it.
I haven't seen any negative comments about it, you know, about that. I mean, it directly affected me.
Because you're kind of coming from a Sony perspective where, you know, the basic framework is already free. So if they
I thought you meant from this perspective of like Sony where they actually give you free things for free, literal actual free. Like you can play
literal actual free.
Yeah. I mean, like the games that
they've been
do on
really,
phone,
really generous with PS Plus these days.
King DC Universe Online. I mean, even before you get to PS Plus,
right.
DC Universe, because that technically, I wouldn't call that stuff free. I mean, everyone says it's free with a subscription, but even that, like, technically, you've paid them money for that,
sure,
and you don't get to keep it, which is fine, and I understand that. But I mean, DC Universe Online, Free Realms is literally free. You know, you can actually play people with the games that you've bought for free, like. Have to pay.
Honestly, are you really that surprised? Because it's fucking Microsoft, and like they're full of douchebaggery all the time about everything.
I think you even need a gold account to use the browser that's in the latest.
Oh,
yeah, they just did a dashboard update, Internet Explorer 9. Hooray! And you have to pay Xbox Live for it.
Right. I haven't even gotten the update for Xbox Live, and I've connected to Live. It just hasn't gotten pushed to me.
It's like, just more ads, and they renamed Quick Play recent.
When they first announced Happy Wars, and Blue, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to like derail this, but when they first announced Happy Wars, I was like really excited. I'm like, yeah, it is kind of unhappy Wars, because I was like, oh, I love that princess. I'm going to get to play with some of my friends on Xbox again, finally, because I was a subscriber to Xbox Live Gold, and I figured out that I never had, my schedule was not amenable to that. Like, I just did, I never played anybody, and I was paying them $60 a year for it. And I know you can get it for $40 or whatever discounts, but I don't want to pay them anything, because I, you know, the games I buy on retail, I should be able to not have half the functionality stripped out of it, because I'm not paying your subscription. So when Happy Wars was announced, I was like, oh yeah, great, I'm going to get to play with my friends again, but nope.
And you know what? Well, you know,
Jeremy,
what?
Is your 360 plugged in?
What?
Internet?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I wondered if you completely unplug it, whether it's a lot quicker because it doesn't have to load up all the ads.
I don't know. I kind of feel like if I do that, I'll die. I mean, I have to be.
You'll die?
Well, you know, I mean, I usually have mine unplugged when don't have it hooked up to the net, because I mean, it does seem to be a little bit quicker. I mean, it doesn't have to load the box art and all the crappy ads and stuff like that. I mean, it does seem like it's a little faster. And because, you know, my Live Gold subscription ran out, you know, there goes Netflix, there goes Crackle. I mean, it's like, and I'm not gonna re-up my subscription. I mean, for around the same money, I can get a Roku box. Mm-hmm. And I can have Netflix on there. I mean, I'm sure there's probably some Crackle.
And since we're crapping on Microsoft, can I just talk about their streaming? That I tried to watch a UFC match. I think it was, 141? That crapped out on me. I tried to watch, there was three things now. I tried to watch the first presidential debate, and that crapped out on me. And
did you get your Halo armor or whatever it is they're doing?
I don't know. I don't know, and I don't care.
If you watched the debates, you'd get like some kind of avatar reward,
I guess.
Don't try. Thanks, and Microsoft. Buy me off.
I haven't changed my avatar since they came out with the avatars.
Right.
That's the only thing I've done to mine is change my t-shirt.
Which
I actually do. I do mine a lot because they give a lot of promo codes for different things, and I'll like change my avatar. I'll be like, I've got a Bing shirt. I really like Bing. I've got nothing against Microsoft. They're a great American company. They're a credit to our nation, but that whole Xbox Live Gold thing really rubs me the wrong way. Blue, talk about Happy Wars again, because I really loved Fat Princess, and I really wanted to love Happy Wars, but I'll probably never get a chance to play it. So tell me, what is it like?
Well, basically, the game starts out, it's 15-on-15, and if you don't have 15 players playing online, AI bots even out the teams. And your goal is to destroy the big tower in the opposing team's castle, and you basically make your way to the opposing team's castle by erecting towers, yes, pause for laughter, along the way, because there's several different spots that you can build.
Having a hard time maintaining my tower.
Oh,
a
no.
Hard time.
Gross.
And you know, there's several spots along the way that you can build the tower. Build like a smaller tower, and from there you can be resurrected. And basically it's like a control for towers. You are trying to take down the opposing team's tower, and they'll be trying to take down yours. When there's like, you know, 15 or 20 people nearby, and they're all swinging and slashing at each other, it looks like a giant clusterfuck. I mean,
yeah,
it does. I mean,
you build towers really quick though.
Everything you've said leading up to that just makes that perfect. Like, you've got all these towers, and you're trying to erect your tower and take other people's towers, and then you clusterfuck each other.
it does. You can't really tell the characters. Like, with the warrior, there's a spin move, and you can kind of see that. And then there's just a normal attack, and you can throw stones. But you really can't tell. There's text above people's heads that's colored, so you can tell what team. So you really can't tell who you're attacking, what the hell's going on.
So one of the things about Fat Princess was they had some interesting map designs. Like, they would actually, you would have people going different routes and things like that. Do they have that same kind of thing here in Happy Wars?
Yeah, they have a couple of different routes throughout the maps. I mean, some are linear than others, but there's like one stage that takes place like kind of like hovering in midair. Your tower will be on like this one like floating island or whatever. And you'll have to take like a catapult to get to like the center island, which has a tower that, you know, which has a spot to build a tower on. And then, like, the opposing team's castle is, like, on the next one, so you have to take another catapult and shoot you, and that'll shoot you up to the level where their tower is. Mm-hmm. And there's also a secondary path that you can take by taking a different catapult.
That kind of sounds a lot like Fat Princess.
Yeah, I mean, they do one thing that's interesting is when you break down the door of the castle, you get into, like, formation.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that, Bell? Or Blue Bell?
Yeah. It's like a team attack, and there's, like, several different team attacks that you can get. I think they're randomly generated, depending on how, randomly given to you every time you level up. When you kill the opposing team members or build a tower, you'll gain XP, and then you level up your character up to level 5, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And every time you level up, you get, like, a different power-up or something like that. And one of the team attacks is, like, you press the Y button, and then all of your nearby teammates will have to walk onto these, like, little circles near your character and press Y. Mm-hmm. And then the person in charge of the attack will hit Y to activate it. And it can be, like, shooting, like, light arrows, and they just shower the area with, with light arrows. Or launching a tornado, which will whip up and spin throughout the area and suck up every enemy that comes pretty close to it. And it's pretty neat getting caught in one of those, because, if you get close to it, it's like your character will, like, stick his weapon in the ground, and he'll be, like, holding on to it, and the tornado is, like, pulling him, and he's, like, hanging upside down. And then eventually he gets sucked off and then spun around and around and around, thrown.
Oh, my God. Do you hear what you just said?
What did I just describe? An evening with Dolph Ziggler or something like that?
There's these little bomb flowers, and I'm always fucking with those and rolling them downhill and taking out people. That's my favorite thing. I don't even engage in the main battles. I'm just throwing the bomb flowers down.
It kind of sounds like a lot of fun. You want to hear something weird? Is that people on Twitter who are normally, like, I follow a few, like, actual Major League Gaming people who are, like, organizing scrimmages and things like that all the time. And I've seen a lot of those guys. They're like, bros, let's go play Happy Wars.
I can understand it. My time with it was great. I'm sort of pissed that my live subscription ran out when it did, because I wanted to play more of it, damn it.
I'm a little surprised that it went free to play. They probably could have charged $5 for it and made a killing.
I wonder why they did that.
How does it compare to, like, Smash Brothers or some other kind of just super giant brawl, melee brawl kind of game?
It's kind of apples to oranges when compared to Brawl. It is kind of closer to the Dynasty Warriors type thing. Not exactly, but yeah. I mean, there's a lot of characters nearby, and I mean, everybody is just going crazy, just swinging, slashing, casting freezing attacks on you. I think mages or clerics will cast, benefits or... like resurrect you or something like that.
I kind of want to play Fat Princess.
It is a lot like
that. I mean, I kind of want to go play Fat Princess right now.
Right. See you guys. Bye.
Maybe while you do this interview.
Hey, good timing.
Well, was that my cue?
I mean, I was trying to make it your cue, but
I thought you were going to take it all the way.
You're the host here. Okay.
Right now, we're going to listen to Ryan, Nick, and Alan from NIS America. Hey everyone, Robert here, and with me today are three amazing dudes who are all strive to bring a little more moe into our lives. Talking about NIS America's Ryan, Alan, and Nick are all here today to talk about the company's upcoming lineup, as well as the awful truth about the printy sex trade business.
Let's go, guys. Thanks, Robert.
I had to throw you that curveball right out the gate.
So, trafficking.
So looking back to last time you guys were on the show, I probably didn't give enough time in our last podcast to offer a thorough enough synopsis of the deliberately complex combat system of Mugen Souls. I was wondering if you guys could kind of explain the system in detail for me.
Yeah, I'll probably pass this on to either Nick or Alan. Nick was the editor and Alan was the translator, so these guys definitely can go real deep on that for you.
The only issue is finding a place to start.
At the beginning, we will.
At the beginning. Just in battle. We're talking about battle, right?
Yes, battle. Combat.
Okay, let's see. Well, it's a free-roaming battle map, so upon your turn, you can move your character within a certain move radius. And the complicated parts come into play when you're Shushu, when it's Shushu's turn. She has a couple of different unique commands that is basically the core system of the game, which I think is where a lot of complications come in. She has the Moe Kill command, wherein you take one of Shushu's personality forms and met up with the enemy. So if the enemy is a masochist, you want to be in your masochist form. And that way, when you choose your phrases, you can match the enemy's mood in that form. So if they're a happy masochist, then you're going to want to say things, I believe, to continue to make them happy as a masochist. So like hitting them in that instance would be good.
Right.
And there's a couple other systems. There's the blast-off system, wherein pretty much any skill you have can blow the enemy back. And that ricochet will cause you to break crystals that are on the battle map. These crystals can have items, other monsters, bonuses.
We hit the jackpot there.
I believe so. Alan, would you like to discuss the peon ball? And
sure. So
we actually had a question about that from one to mention his name, JRPG Leva. He wanted to know about the peons, how they're harvested, and about the G-ship battles.
Well, JRP. So the main character, Shushu, as Nick mentioned, has her Moe Kill special attack, and she... on the battlefield, when she uses this Moe Kill that Nick just explained, at the end of the battle, you get peons, which are called Shampuru in this game. And each of these Shampuru actually has a different role, which you can check in the menu. For example, you might have one that's a like a nurse, or one that's like it looks like a drill or something. And all of these play into, actually, the G-Castle battles. The more peons you get, and the more varied types of peons you get, you have access to a stronger... attacks in the G-Castle battles. And the G-Castle battles themselves work very similar to a game of rock, paper, scissors. You've got pierce attacks, you've got defensive attacks, you've got healing attacks and normal attacks. And during these battles, you'll have Duotor or perhaps another character come up and make a comment like, oh, it looks like he's getting ready to heal. And so, you know, you can do a normal attack then. Or it looks like he's planning a pierce attack, so in which case you'd want to do a defense or something like that. So it's really nothing too complex individually, just I guess it gets kind of overwhelming once you know you all take it together. But basically, it's just a matter of in the battle, you make as many peons as you can. Definitely something not to neglect when you're playing the game. And then periodically checking in the menu to see, you know, how many peons you've gotten, things like that. Oh, and it should be mentioned that once you do actually get these peons, you don't need to do anything to the ship itself. The game automatically takes care of that aspect for you. So all you need to do is worry about getting peons in battle, and then they're, you know, shuttled off to the appropriate place in the ship, and you're stronger.
And getting some clothes on those peons.
Exactly.
Right. We got a question from Soft Tentacle. It's an interesting handle there. He's got a few questions about the release of Mugen Souls. He asked, why was the U.S. release pushed back? And for the European release, did you have to translate the game into French, German, and Italian?
For that one, it was just it was a pure scheduling thing on our side. So okay. From North America. So mm-hmm. I mean, unfortunately, it was supposed to come out, and then just a few things came up where we actually had to push it back a few weeks. So you know, we're only about 11 days out until launch from right now. So, and I know that we know for a fact that a lot of people are pretty bummed about that, and mm-hmm. Some people we heard that even took off work to actually play through the game and such. So mm-hmm. yeah, we really really don't want to ever do that, but you know, it was just something we had to do. So. For the PAL version of the game, the packaging and such mm-hmm. is going to be, you know, we have ones in Italian, French, German, Spanish, and then we have like an Australian version. But the actual game itself will be in English. Most of our games that we do, unless mm-hmm. we specifically say so, will always have, you know, the same English voicing in the game, and then also just the English text. So mm-hmm. it's more of just kind of the packaging.
Okay. So how has Mugen Souls been received overseas?
So far, we've been monitoring. We have a thread on our forum, actually, mm-hmm. about reviews that users can post and that we've been looking ourselves. And it's been really, really good, actually. A lot awesome. Of people are really enjoying the crazy battle system and all the things that you can do, kind of like the Disgaea series. And I guess as both Nick and I are probably really happy to see that a lot of people are really happy with the voice acting and things like that. So it's been pretty positive overall.
Very cool. Now let's talk a little bit about Hyperdimension Neptunia Victory, which is the third iteration of the franchise, which NIS recently announced that they were publishing. Now, I got to admit, I'm a little angry here, not necessarily about Victory, but about the accompanying app, which lets you take pictures with Nuar and Neptunia. And as an Android user, am I going to have to rely on New Love Plus to satisfy my urges for a virtual companion?
I don't know anything about Android just yet. So far, we've only heard that it's iOS. So, yeah, I know that, a lot of fans and such have Android. And, for the moment, I'm pretty sure it's just going to be iOS. But, you know, because I guess when you're developing for Android, there's so many different kinds of, so I've heard that, you know, mm-hmm. Android versions and such. So, but, you know, we'll see what happens. But, yeah. I'll take a picture and put my arm around the character for you. Because you know people are going to be doing that. They
of course, of course.
I think it's going to go real bad real quick in a lot of cases.
Yeah. I can't wait for that page. I expect to head back to game industry. And can you tell us more or anything about the game's impetus or the context? I see that it takes place during the 80s.
Yeah, it it's more like an alternate dimension that's set in the past.
Okay.
At the beginning of the game, it kicks off like a couple years after Mark II.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's gotten really lazy, so they've all fallen back to level one. And like the people of game industry are sort of getting upset with their goddesses for being lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them somehow gets the ability to send Neptune into another dimension that is the 80s. Because seriously, the 80s was like a different dimension.
It is. Certainly.
And then after she gets there, she starts to meet like all of her friends that are sort of younger mm-hmm. versions. Not really, because when you're a CPU, you don't age, but obviously it's like 20 years less experience, I guess.
Right.
And so it's sort of like, It's pure fan service in a way, and mm-hmm. in that you take the same characters, but you erase everything that they know about each other, and then just drop them into a bunch of new situations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a lot of fun, and it's not serious at all.
Of course.
Yeah. But the whole point of the game is to get Neptune back home, and over the course of the game, you might not want to, because it's just that silly where she is now.
Hmm. Okay. So also let's talk about Generation of Chaos, Pandora's Reflection, which was announced at TGS a few weeks ago. Tell me about, now this is the first collaboration between Idea Factory and Sting, right? That I know.
I'd have to double check on that one, but yeah.
Am I making stuff up?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Sting definitely has an awesome fan base, so mm-hmm. I'm pretty stoked for that. I mean, the game itself was actually in Japan. It was Generation K6. Mm-hmm. So we decided to slightly change the name there. But yeah, I mean,
The one you put out, Aedis Eclipse, that was four? Was that four or five?
Was that? That's actually way before my time.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, I'd have to double check on that one for you.
Okay. Now, have you guys seen the game? Because I know Idea Factory and Sting, they each have their own styles. Like Sting, they like to fill up the screen with just this overabundance of visual information, which I totally love. And Idea Factory, you know, they have a fairly intricate battle system. Is there one more than the other? Are the two both in the game?
It seems like Sting's influence was pretty heavy on how battles play out.
Okay.
It sort of reminds me a little bit of Yggdrasil Union, but more real time instead of like classic strategy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, another parallel might be the Girlancer series. It seems like on the battlefield that you move your characters in a particular direction, mm-hmm. and when you're choosing where to move them, the game will pause, but you know, when you let go of that button, the characters will, you know, begin moving and the enemy will be moving at the same time as well. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a lot of strategy involved. I mean, it is a strategy RPG. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, now I did see one screenshot. It was of a sword carrying blonde kind of squaring off against a looked like a magician kitty. Ooh, which looked kind of cool.
But you didn't see one of there's also like frogs and other things. It's pretty sweet.
You guys sold me already. Frogs and kitties.
And other things.
Yeah. Uh-oh. I don't want to know, Ryan. Okay. So cool. And when is that coming out?
That one is set for, it's going to be PSN only. Mm-hmm. And that is looking to be February of 2013.
Okay, and hopefully we'll be able to play that on our Vitas. So, and JRPG Lava, he also had a question he wanted to know about, one last time, The Witch and the Hundred Knights. Have you guys played it?
I haven't actually played it. There wasn't too much of that at TGS, unfortunately. So, for the moment, we're still, you know, like everyone else, with bated breath, waiting to see, you know, when the release is going to be. So, that's kind of the official word on it right now, unfortunately. But, I mean, from what I heard, you know, they're still cracking on it 100%. So, it's not like it's not going to happen. It's just, they just want to make sure they get it right before they put it out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very cool. Well, thank you guys so much for coming by, stopping on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I apologize for the Resident Evil door that was been really, really like, you know, I'm sure you guys will be able to hear it, but yeah, we have this gigantic double door with no window on it that just slams on itself every time someone comes in the office. So
you zombies, you wouldn't believe.
So not plugging Capcom.
No, these are Moe zombies.
We're back.
Hey,
with Halloween nearing, I thought I would stir the trivia cauldron and conjure up some questions fitting for All Hallows Eve.
Yay, my favorite holiday. Wait. Oh, wait. We have to tell everyone where we're going to be for Halloween.
I'm just going to scare kids.
I don't have any makeup, so I probably won't go as Joker this year. You remember my Halloween picture from last year? I'll have to whip that out for Halloween. That's like one of my favorite pictures of myself, actually.
Blue, when you listen to this week's episode, I want you to really pay attention to everything that you say.
All right.
Jeremy, what are you going to be?
Well, as somebody with a beard, it's kind of hard to actually get a costume, you know, because you have that extra accessory all the time.
You could be Gordon Freeman.
Yeah, but he's kind of an ass. When people are talking to him,
be Kratos.
Well, no, he is. It could be Kratos. Actually, what I was going to do is I was going to be Adam Jensen, but you know, and you could even do the voice. You'd be like, you sound a little too happy about that, Pritchard.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah.
I could get some like awesome glasses. I'd like color a couple of plastic spoons black and then put them over my eyes and kind of like. Kind of
I can love bloom on the battlefield.
Yeah, I never asked for this.
I think I told you guys already. I'm going to be Chell from Portal.
That's right.
Yeah, awesome. How are you going to do?
Do you have the Portal gun?
Are you going to do puppies?
I'm making the shoes. I'm making the Portal gun. I have this stuff called Wonderflex, which is this like white plasticky stuff that if you heat it up with like a hair dryer, you can mold it into any shape you want. And I have LEDs and everything. So the only thing I have to make myself is a switch so that when I hit the switch, it will turn the orange one off and the blue one on. And then the eye will turn the blue one off and the orange one on or whatever.
Did you just say something about turning blue on?
Oh God. No,
we got to move on now. Okay.
Trivia.
So one warning tonight before we enter the, you don't know, jack-o'-lantern territory. Not all the questions this week are multiple choice. So you guys ready?
Uh-oh. Wait, none of them are?
No, just one isn't.
Here's the thing. You have to ask all the questions in your Vincent Price voice.
Yeah.
I wish I could. It's been a few years since I've seen the
land. Okay, fine. We'll settle for Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. Oh, geez, I take it back.
Yeah. Number one, put the following games in chronological order by release date.
Uh-oh.
We have Nightmare on Elm Street, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Dracula, Resident Evil, and Friday the 13th for the NES.
Ooh.
Oh, shit.
Where do they start, guys?
Nightmare on Elm Street, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Resident Evil, and what?
Dracula, and Friday the 13th for NES.
Okay. There's
a 2600 version.
I got that. So I'm going to say Friday the 13th, Dracula, although maybe I want to switch those two. Friday the 13th, Dracula... what are the other three?
Nightmare on Elm Street. Hey, how about if we just all do this together? Like, can we just have one answer together amongst all of us? I think that's probably the best way to do it. So I agree with you on that, because I'd say Friday the 13th, Dracula, Nightmare on Elm Street. Then after that is Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Resident Evil. Now, I'm actually not familiar with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, so I kind of just put
if
it
you
there.
Guys could name platforms that they were on, I think that would be a great help.
Dracula was the SNES, right?
Wrong.
NES?
Wrong. Earlier.
No, Dracula is like...
Oh, crap. So Dracula goes first?
Friday the 13th.
Okay. I'll give you a hint. Dracula is for the Intellivision.
Yeah. So Dracula, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Resident Evil?
Say that again. Dracula?
So Dracula, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Jeremy, are you sure Nightmare on Elm Street doesn't come? I mean,
Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm trying to remember, because was Nightmare on Elm Street the one where you could play like the four players?
Yes, you got it, LJN.
Yeah, that was terrible. But I played a lot of it though, because I had
no Dracula is okay. Whatever. Resident Evil, of course. Yeah. Okay,
Deagle. You know what you don't have in there is Illbleed, which is a great game. And if Sean was here, he would be just as disappointed as I am that you
see,
don't have
I
that
deliberately in. Left that out because I expected both you and Sean to be here and know exactly when the year that came out.
Best game ever.
2000, I'm guessing.
I kind of want to know where Splatterhouse is in this list.
Oh, don't worry, we got that coming out.
Oh, okay, all right.
What about Death Smiles?
I'm going to give you guys Dracula in television 1982, followed by Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is for the Atari 1983, followed by Friday the 13th for SNES, that was in 1989. Next year, Jeremy, you got it, for player Nightmare on Elm Street 1990. Do you guys remember the year that Resident Evil, the original, came out for PS1?
Wasn't it 96?
You got it. Good job.
Okay.
Okay. You asked
Illbleed, for the record, came out 2001.
Okay.
just so you know.
I was, what did I say, 99, 2000?
Yeah, you were close.
I was close, damn close. It's hard to think of Halloween without thinking of Rick, the masked protagonist of Splatterhouse series. Name the console that hasn't had a version of the side-scrolling beat-em-up. Is it A, the TurboGrafx-16, B, PlayStation 3, C, PC, D, Genesis, or E, Dreamcast?
I think I'm going to go with the Dreamcast.
Yeah, I don't think there was a Dreamcast one.
I'm going to say Dreamcast, actually.
The correct answer is Dreamcast. You guys got it. Too easy. Woo-hoo! Number three, Stateside Gamers. Never got to see Splatterhouse 1 Paku Graffiti, a Famicom-based entry in the franchise. What was unique about this version? A, Rick had to kill victims before using their blood to write cryptic symbols on walls. B, characters were super deformed. C, Firebrand and Sir Arthur from the Ghosts and Goblins series made cameos. Or D, players controlled Jennifer, who was tasked with saving Rick from demons, reversing the impetus of the original game.
That sounds kind of logical, but that also makes me think, no, that's probably not it. I'm going to say writing symbols on the walls with blood.
No, because it's Japan, man. They wouldn't have that stuff. Didn't they have no violence?
No violence.
Yeah, no blood, right? No gore back then.
Yeah, but look at all the Japanese gore movies.
Yeah, but in games, it doesn't seem like they do. I mean, a lot of that stuff, it doesn't seem like they do there. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Am I wrong about that? They have.
Well,
a lot
look
of, like,
at Onii-chan Vara.
Yeah, but I'm thinking.
No,
you're
kind of.
All right.
You're on the right
track. I'm gonna go with the super deformed.
Yeah, Sage.
The blood on walls thing. It didn't come here. I don't know.
So you're just giving up.
I said blood on the walls because
okay.
I have no
correct
better
answer. Characters are super deformed.
Yeah. See.
Oh, crap.
They totally super deform people.
Okay. Number four, gamers who played all but the second iteration of the Clock Tower series will probably remember Bobby Barrow, the murderous psychopath who is better known by what name? A, Creeping Death, B, Scissorman, C, Pyramid Head, or D, the Corroder?
Well, it's obviously not Pyramid Head, because Pyramid Head is Silent Hill.
Oh, gee.
What's wrong with you?
What was the first one?
The first one.
Creeping Death?
Yes, Creeping Death.
I think I'm going to go with that.
Okay.
Say the options again.
Creeping Death, Scissor Man, Pyramid Head, or the Corroder?
Fucking Scissor Man?
It is Scissor Man, yes.
Correct.
Yay!
Scissor Man.
Yay!
That is a good little game series too. It's almost like a point and click adventure. It's like an old Sierra adventure game, kinda.
It is. Yeah.
It's neat.
Cool.
It is. Okay, guys, I'm gonna play a sound clip. You're gonna tell me what game it's from.
Sounds like the
Oh, that's Altered Beast.
Welcome to your doom.
Yeah. Altered Beast. Okay.
Wise from your quave.
Yeah, that was the other one. That would have been too easy. Okay.
Oh, really? I'm sorry. Was that okay? That would have been too easy.
And
okay.
We got a theme song coming up. Name the game.
Oh. Let's see. Was there a Castlevania game on the Genesis?
Yeah, that sounds like Castlevania to me.
Okay, you guys say Castlevania, I'll say Ghosts and Goblins.
Damn it.
Yeah, Jeremy got it.
Damn
ah,
it.
Shit.
He knows it. He's doing a little soft shoe right now.
I am. Actually, I'm bobbing my head.
I knew I heard it somewhere before, but I couldn't think where.
Can I admit something? I can never remember if the American version is Ghosts and Goblins or Ghouls and Ghosts.
I know one's the sequel.
Oh, is that right? See, I don't even know.
There was the original one, and then for, what was it, Genesis? They changed the name around. Okay, so we got a few questions. Let's wrap up these real quickly. We got
that was good trivia, Deagle. I like that. That was good.
Yeah, I like the sound bites.
Ready to change that up. We got a question from FindMuck, and he's asking, "Dear King of Sony Peripherals," I assume he said, "Right now Sony is testing the 4K waters with four PS3s duct taped together playing GT5. Is this the right direction? Higher levels."
You know, I think the interesting thing about television is before we got to HD, I mean, the last innovation in the viewing experience was the advent of color television. And I think the, you know, the fact that people want better looking stuff. I think in this case, though, I think it's all going to boil down to cost. I mean, the thing about 4K is I don't think it's going to come cheap. And yeah. just like you go to CES.
Did you guys hear? There's a Chinese company that's making. It's not as humongous as Sony's, but they're making one that's significantly smaller, but $6,000 instead of $25,000.
Yeah, you imagine if you crack the panel on that thing?
Yeah, but still, $6,000 now, 4 years. Hey, you'll see them at Big Lots.
So that's the thing, FindMuck. I think that they're going in the right direction with better fidelity. I mean, I think everybody wants their stuff to look better. I think the cost is going to be the big factor here. I don't think anybody's really in the mood to spend a lot of vanity money on 4K right now. But
$25,000?
I think we might be another console generation because, you know, at one time we were pushing for 1080, 1080p, but now almost all games natively are 720.
Yeah, you know, the thing about it, though, too, is in terms of being able to take advantage of that resolution, I mean, the assets and things like that. I mean, if we're talking about games, I guess I was thinking about it in terms of just like television and movies, because I think that we're already at a kind of a breaking point in terms of the amount of effort and money that it takes to, you know, create what we consider to be high def now. I don't think that 4K gaming is going to be a thing. Although he did mention in his question playing GT5, I mean, if stuff can be up-resed and can be made to, you know, sort of be... You know, if those televisions are backwards compatible with existing content, it actually looks better, maybe. But I don't know if I see it any time in the real near future. I think some of that stuff with 4K is kind of more in the concept stage right now. I don't think it's really ready for consumer prime time for a while.
Yep. Okay. We got Digital J, Game of the Year pick, both from what you played and what you expect.
Ooh.
When does Game of the Year come out?
whatever we damn well want. Probably at the end of
the calendar. At the end of the year? Yeah.
December 31st, the night of... I'm going to say XCOM so far. Derived a lot of enjoyment out of that.
I was going to say XCOM. Instead...
I mean, that's fine. We can share.
No. Oh, all right, for now. No, if I think of a better one.
You can say Happy Wars.
I'll fight you for it.
All right, let's go.
Good luck with that.
My mech versus your mech.
Yeah.
If MechWarrior Online actually released this year, which I don't think it will, I would say that. I'm having a lot of fun with that. But in terms of games that are released, XCOM probably.
We should let people bet on us. We should all play mech and let people bet on who will win.
Oh, yeah.
Give us a portion of the winnings.
After Jeremy just spoke for an hour about it, I think I'm going to put my money on him.
There could be a hidden winner in the...
He's 101 to odds.
So three of us versus him.
I'm like three.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm even much.
Go ahead, Blue.
I was actually going to say it's kind of a toss-up for me as far as ones that have already been released. I mean, I really enjoyed Virtua Fighter 5 Final Showdown. I mean, that was really good, but I think I'd probably have to give the edge to Kid Icarus Uprising.